Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to strap our boots on. This is a perfect day to die. Wipe the blood out of our eyes. In this life, there's no surrender. There's nothing left for us to do. Find the strength to see this through. We are the ones who will never be broken. With our final breath, we'll fight to the death. We are soldiers, we are soldiers.
And thank you once again for coming to Bard's Logic Political Talk, part of the Growing Conservative Conversation, and also part of the Patriot Journalist Network. And you can find us at the Patriot Journalist Network by going to www.patriotjournalist.com. You can also find Bard's Logic Political Talk page on the website. Please go there, check it out, like the page, join the group that you can also find on Facebook. So just put Bard's Logic Political Talk in the search engine, and you will find it there on Facebook, and you are welcome to join and to like the page. Also, check out the website at www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com, where you can see some articles, a lot of links, and also some great charities in which you can give to. Now, tonight, we will be talking about the government shutdown, Obamacare, immigration, and the debt ceiling. And, of course, callers and chat participation are welcome, and all mics do stay open during the show. So once you come in and have your say, then we kind of do a round table in which we will share the mic around for people can get as much out as they'd like. And so with the government shutdown, in the battle to defund Obamacare waging, the debt ceiling increase looms. U.S. debt is over $17 trillion. Obamacare will increase it, and also will the immigration reform that has all but been forgotten in that debate. So we're hoping folks be joining us tonight and finding some logic in this government chaos. Or we can also explore, is it really chaos, or is this something that is done is being done purposely to distract the citizens? And now, tonight, I want to start off with an article while we wait for some of our panelists to call in. And if anyone would like to call into the show, you are welcome to either to listen to it, or you can also chime in by dialing 347-945-7428. And just press 1 on the number dial, and we will proceed to get you into the show. And also, if you'd like to participate in chat, sometimes I do call out the folks who are in there as well. So I will start off with the article that I have here, and it is about the immigration bill. And it's titled, and this is from September 30th, but this is also, of course, while we're still building up for the Obamacare debate that was in the Senate, and then also the shutdown that we're experiencing now. But I still want to put it out there that these issues are still looming out there, as well as the issue of immigration. And, of course, Senator Ted Cruz was talking about how important Obamacare and immigration are and how they are linked. And you can hear more of that conversation from one of our other shows by going to the archives here on Blog Talk Radio and finding the show that talked about Ted Cruz and when he was on the Senate talking about Obamacare and immigration. And by the AP, it says immigration overhaul legislation has been dormant in the House for months, but a few Republicans are working behind the scenes to advance it at a time that Capitol Hill is immersed in a partisan brawl over government spending and the President Barack Obama's health care law. The chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, Representative Bob Goodlatte, has been discussing possible legal status for the estimated 11 million immigrants living in the United States illegally. He's also been working with House Majority Leader Eric Cantor, a fellow Virginia Republican, on a bill offering citizenship to immigrants brought illegally to the U.S. as children. Of course, we know those are the term anchor babies. Representative Paul Labrador, a Republican from Idaho, and Ted Poe, Republican from Texas, are working on a plan to create a visa program allowing more lower-skilled workers in the country. Goodlatte and the chairman of the House Homeland Security Committee, Representative Mike McCall, Republican, Texas, holds out hopes for floor action by late October on a series of immigration bills that already have passed their committees. And this is a quote, "I would think that it would be their next agenda item in the queue after we're done with this mess." I believe he's referring to the brawl of government spending. And, of course, we will be talking about the debt ceiling later. And also, of course, the Obamacare. And so he continues, McCall said this past week, referring to bitter divisions over the health law, the level of government spending, and the growing federal debt. And, of course, as we mentioned, it's over $17 million now. The article continues, "The attention of House GOP leaders seems certain to remain squarely focused on the fiscal disputes until they are resolved, leaving immigration on the back burner for some time to come. But lawmakers and outside advocates insist that 3 months after the Democrat-led Senate passed a sweeping immigration bill, the issue is growing signs of life in the Republican-run House." Another quote is that despite the appearance that would suggest everyone in Washington is focused on one thing, work is going on and other issues beneath the radar, said Jamar Jacoby, head of the Immigration Works USA, a coalition of small businesses that support comprehensive immigration legislation. Goodlatte has made it clear he wants to see the issue resolved. Speaker John Boehner, Ohio, and other members of House Republican leadership also support a resolution to an issue that has become a political drag for their party. While Goodlatte has been outspoken about his desire to legislation to the floor as soon as possible, House leaders have been more circumspect, adding to the uncertainty about whether or when anything actually happens. Moving immigration forward remains a priority, but right now there's no firm timetable, said Doug Hay, a spokesman for Cantor. The issue is a top second term goal for Obama, and of course that is under his Obamacare, which of course is at the foremost of, and that's his legacy that Obama is pushing through, and we're seeing that today. And the article continues, House leaders have said they plan a step-by-step approach in contrast to the comprehensive Senate bill that added billions of dollars in spending on border security, remade a legal immigration system from top to bottom, and created a 13-year path to citizenship for millions living here illegally. The McCall committee approved a border security bill that Lottie's committee has signed off on, on legislation addressing a range of issues, including visas for high-skilled workers and enforcement of immigration laws. But so far, there has been no House GOP bill taking on this trickiest policy for the Republicans, what to do about those already here illegally. Okay, and it continues here on a little bit longer. It says, a bill in the works by Cantor and Goodlatte would offer eventual citizenship to immigrants brought here as children. The proposal appears to have support from a fair number of Republicans, But many Republicans are wary of backing anything broader that could be perceived as amnesty for people who break immigration laws to be into this country. There's no guarantee House Republicans will ever offer a bill to resolve that issue, much less bring it to the floor for a vote. Still, Gidlotte has outlined in some detail that he would like to see in such a bill, and his approach may contain the seeds of compromise. And we'll be talking, of course, tonight, folks, about the compromise that the Republicans are trying to give to the Senate and have some of the things in the government funded. We'll also hear some comments from Harry Reid today on that, as well as some Republicans who are beginning to cave and are looking to support a clean CR. But we'll get that back to that, but back to the article, so I can finish that out. It says, Gidlotte would allow immigrants here illegally to obtain legal work status, and from there, they would use the existing routes of citizenship, marrying a U.S. citizen or getting sponsored by an employer or U.S. citizen relative, such as an approach would allow Republicans to deal with millions of people in the U.S. illegally without bestowing so-called special path to citizenship, as the Senate did, a concept that becomes toxic to many in the GOP. Depending on how it's structured, Gidlotte approach could ultimately result in citizenship for perhaps as many as 7 million immigrants now here illegally. We'll see what that could do to our economy. And this is off the article. And with the debt and the debt ceiling, of course, debate going to be coming up in a few weeks. It says, Jacoby estimates, although Democrats and outside advocates caution that they would have to see the details, because unless problems in the current system are fixed, many fewer could end up benefiting. Some say they're encouraged. It gives the Republicans a way out, and it gets us to where we want to go, said Representative Henry Seuler, of Democrat from Texas. We met recently with Gidlotte, along with Representative Luis Gutierrez, Democrat Illinois, to discuss immigration. The Republicans have some people that want zero. We got some folks on our side that want 100%, but eventually we got to sit down and talk, Seuler said. Gidlotte's staff declined to make her available for an interview, but at a forum this month with Latino GOP leaders, he defended his approach. Quote, that will not result in every single person who came here unlawfully. It's interesting how he used it unlawfully instead of illegally, of course, because of the picture it puts in folks' minds. But anyway, unlawfully getting all the way to citizenship, but I feel very strongly in my conversations with people, it would be a major solution to the problem, he said. House Democrat leaders have grown impatient with Republican inaction and are looking at introducing a sweeping immigration bill of their own, a modified version of the legislation that passed the Senate, in an effort to pressure the GOP. Advocates are promising rallies and protests around the country October 5th to keep the pressure. Of course, that's only 3 days, folks, and with the government shut down and all the other things going on, the chaos going on there, that remains to be seen. And in closing, comprehensive immigration reform is within our reach, Gutierrez said at a news conference. We have the ugly, bitter partisan fight. In the middle, we must continue to see the light to get this done. So, folks, unfortunately, the debate on immigration has not yet left us, and so it is still there. It is still looming out there with us, as well as the debt ceiling. And I see some folks in the chat here after the article. I want to welcome you into the show. And I also see one with a name there in the chat. And I want to welcome you, Harriet. Thank you very much for coming to the show. And for those who just got here, they're welcome to call and listen in or make any comments about anything that we had tonight. And, of course, you can do that by calling 347-945-7428. And so just wanted to keep immigration in mind, and we can talk more about that later on in the program. So I just wanted that to be an issue that people are still paying attention to, because it definitely is very important to America and to the American economy. Now, of course, first and foremost, people know that there is the government shutdown that's being taken, going on currently. We're, I guess, about 2 days into it. It is a relief to see that the Boehner and the Republicans have stood the ground, as Newt Gingrich suggested. But, of course, unfortunately, there are a number of Republicans that are looking to that appear to be caving in supporting a clean CR bill. And those are Newhart from Pennsylvania, Grimm from New York, Fitzpatrick from Pennsylvania, Diaz Barlott from Florida, Paul Paulson from Minnesota. There's also Gerlach from Pennsylvania, and there's Simpson from Idaho, and Young from Florida. And of course, that's just some. There's probably many other on the list who may be getting ready to falter. But I think what Harry Reid did today, and a little faux pas, I think, that could bolster what the, you know, the Republicans do hang on, is to, I'm getting this audio here. Okay. That's interesting. So, let's try to get an audio clip of what Harry Reid said today about what some of the things the Republicans are trying to do, kind of like piecemealing. And, of course, the Republicans, who do have control of the House, and it is constitutionally the House's duties to have the power of the purse, and so are trying to find ways to be able to get funding to veterans who are not currently being funded, and also to other things such as children who are going to be getting cancer treatments. And Harry Reid kind of stepped in it, and I'm going to try to find this audio clip from earlier today about Harry Reid. And now it looks like that clip might have been taken off the site that I was going to. And it looks like it has. Let's refresh the page here and see what we've got. Yep, there we go. And here it is, folks, an exchange between Harry Reid and Dana Bash. And here we go.
Will you at least pass that? And if not, aren't you? If you all talked about children with cancer unable to go to clinical trials, the House is specifically going to pass a bill that says
are you playing the same political games?
I'm sorry, folks. Looks like we had to stop and start here. So let me go ahead and try this again. Thank you.
Children with cancer unable to go to clinical trials. The House is presumably going to pass a bill that funds at least the NIH. Given what you said, will you at least pass that? And if not, aren't you playing the same political games that Republicans are?
Listen, Senator Durbin explained that very well. And he did it here, he did it on the floor earlier, as did Senator Schumer. And it's this. What right did they have to pick and choose what part of government's going to be funded? It's obvious what's going on here. You talk about reckless and irresponsible. Wow. What this is all about is Obamacare. They are obsessed. I don't know what other word I can use. They are obsessed with this Obamacare thing. It's working now, and it'll continue to work, and people will love it even more than they do now by far. So they have no right to pick and choose.
But if you can help one child who has cancer, why wouldn't you do it?
Why would we want to do that? I have 1,100 people at Nellis Air Force Base that are sitting home. They have a few problems of their own. This is to have someone of your intelligence suggest such a thing. Maybe
I'm just
asking.
And there you have it, folks. Why would we want to do something like that? Why would they want to let the Republicans, you know, open up the door for these children to be able to get those treatments? What right do they have? Of course, they are the House of Representatives, control of the House of Representatives. And, of course, as controlling the House of Representatives, they carry the power of the purse on what the Congress, or, you know, what they get to spend. That is within their power. And, of course, it's about Obamacare. Yes, it's all about Obamacare. Certainly it is. That is the goal, is to defund Obamacare. And that's going to come up in where Obamacare is going to affect the debt ceiling. We'll talk about that later. But for him to say, you know, they're obsessed with the Obamacare, and it's all about Obamacare. Well, of course it is. It's always been about that. It's never been about anything else. They've tried to do the compromises. But they won't, and they have every right as the House of Representatives to pick and choose, basically, as he said, where the money goes. I mean, that's part of their constitutional duty is to do that. So with Reid doing that, but you know, with Reid doing that, I was going to say, I think that gives a lot of ammunition. I see Harriet, thank you, in the chat, putting in there's going to be 18 Republicans. I guess I may have missed one that was someone that's on the list. I think I only had a handful there, but I heard 17, but it looks like, according to Harriet, it's going to be 18. I hate to say it, but I think as time goes on, it's going to be more to come. However, if the Republicans, you know, stand strong and use what Harriet, Harry Reid is, you know, kind of stuck his foot in his mouth tonight, then I think that we'll do well for them if they find a way to do that. But because, of course, we want to be able to fund, they have these children be able to get their thing. We want to be able to fund veterans. And it's actually unconscionable for the Democrats to try to keep that in for Obamacare, which they're just trying to use as a way to build a constituency of dependents, you know, for people who are going to rely on them. And this is another way that they're going to try and bring pressure to bear, is because we all know that on October 1st, people could start signing up for health care. Well, I've got we already know that some of the unions out there that supported Obamacare are now against it, are now against Obamacare, and say, knowing how much of a tragedy it's going to be, because, of course, you know, we've covered this previous on the show, and check the archives, folks, if you'd like to hear more on that. Just touch a little bit on it, is that the unions know, whoa, wait a minute, we're going to have less people who are going to be working full-time employment. And, of course, what's that going to do? It's going to hurt the unions too, you know, of course, because they're going to get, you know, less fees from people who are working part-time. And so, and for those who really do care about the employees that they represent, are going to know that, you know, businesses are not going to, you know, they're not going to be able to afford, you know, Obamacare. And so, you know, we've already talked about how people are going to, you know, lose a lot of hours, and it's already happening already. I mean, there's just a whole list of businesses out there that are, you know, already starting to cut their staffs, you know, because of it. But what I've got here in my hands is a letter from to an employee in a union, and this is one of the tactics that we'll be explaining later. It says, to all participants and eligible dependents, you currently received a notice from your employer describing the new health care insurance marketplace, previously referred to as exchanges, created as a part of the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, or ACA or health care reform. Now, we know that a lot of bills out there, folks, are exactly the opposite of what, you know, like the Patriot Act, are exactly the opposite of what their title is. So we know that it's anything but the Affordable Health Care Act. I mean, I've heard numbers as much as 41% increases in premiums. And then the letter goes, continues, that notice described how the marketplaces will work and noted that you may be eligible for premium tax, this is key, folks, premium tax credits to help pay for coverage. Premium tax credits to help pay for coverage. So while we're still in the, and I'll continue on with the letter, but so we are, but I'm going to stop because this is key. We are still in the debate. They're still looking to not fund Obamacare. And what is going to be paying for these tax credits to help people pay for their premiums? Okay, I've got a... Okay. Well, I just got a message here from Facebook. Hello, Chris. I'll give you kind of a synopsis of the first half hour. Is and for all those folks who just came in as well, because I do see they're also on the line, is we talked briefly about an article about how Obamacare, even though Obamacare debate is going on and, of course, the government shutdown, there's also other topics out there, and that's immigration and immigration reform. And so I read an article from there. And also I am currently reading a letter from that was given to an employee of a business that has, you know, which has a union, and they're talking about the benefits package for the, you know, for their employees. So at this time, Chris, he was the administrator of Coalition of Freedom, which is a Facebook room or group, I should say. For folks to check out, and just go, if you are a Facebook user, just go to the search engine and type in Coalition of Freedom, and there you see the group where it actually has by topic where folks can post for things going on today in America. So thank you very much, Chris, for calling into the show. How are you?
Good, man. How are you doing?
Good. Doing good. Just you know, going over the government shutdown, I said Obamacare, immigration, and of course, we're aware that the debt ceiling debate is going to be coming up soon, and so we kind of have a hodgepodge of different topics tonight. But the one thing I was reading from before you came on was, as I said, a letter that an employee that's with a business that has a union that, for, you know, they do. Excuse me, their benefits, and they also have negotiations through, was talking about how now they're eligible to get their premium, their tax credits for, to help pay for their premiums of their health care, of their plans, even while it's still being debated about being funded. Because what I think, and I'll get right to it, is I think that, of course, they're going to try to get as many folks as early as they can signed up for Obamacare, expecting to get these tax credits to help pay for their premiums so that if they do, you know, defund Obamacare, all these folks are going to be like, hey, wait a minute, you know, we thought that, you know, our premiums are going to have, we're going to get tax credits to help us pay for our premiums, and now we're not going to get it because the Republicans, you know, defunded Obamacare, and now we're not going to be able to have that, and of course we all know then that's going to make the Republicans look bad.
Well, you know that the union leaders were, you know, pretty bold in the public sphere on their opinion of Obamacare. Then, very quietly, you know, it's those things where you don't, unless you're paying attention, you miss it in the news. But I saw that they had gone and met with the president, and then nobody said anything about that. So when you were talking about this letter, that's starting to, you know, connect some dots. Interesting. Well, you know that, and I think most people know that Obamacare is a nightmare, and it's an expensive nightmare, and it's going to cost a lot more to put out. And with all these businesses being exempted, mm-hmm. and people throwing people. It's almost, to me, Robert, and you always got to remember, the goal is not Obamacare. You know what I mean? The goal is socialized medicine, single payer. That's the goal.
Right.
And every one of these people, from Harry Reid to the president to any of them, have said this over and over and over again, and yet it does not get talked about in the news, in the argument, which is really disgusting because that's the goal. The Saturday Night Live was the only people that really nailed it good, you know, and talked about, you know, the guy that played Ted Cruz, you know, that came on the skit. I don't know if you saw it, but
yeah,
I smell socialism. You know, he was the only one that nailed it. I mean, this is – and what we're doing is we're arguing about health care, which Obamacare is not about. It's about insurance. And we're arguing about, you know, I mean, Harry Reid – I don't know if you saw that clip today, but Harry Reid was on an interview, and the lady was like, because the House was trying to pass the NIH, which had to do with this special funding for experimental and high-risk situations in medical situations, and there's these 200 kids that may
right.
not get funded for this special treatment, you know, for this
yeah.
experimental treatment for cancer. And Harry Reid was like, basically, I don't care about them. You know, I mean,
oh, yeah,
it was pretty blatant.
That's why.
But here's the key to that. If that would have been a Republican, if that would have been John Boehner that said that, the media would have been playing that 24/7. Because then Harry went right back to the House floor, and he had a little one of his speeches saying that the Republicans don't care about 200 kids on cancer. I mean,
that's
and they would have played that. They would have put those two clips together, and every 20 seconds on mainstream media, that would have been played if it would have been a Republican in charge. And so the battle we're fighting, it's so obvious and it's so ridiculous. It was like the same battle we fought with gun control. That you just standing here watching them lie and nobody calls them on it, except for we see it because we're in that other sphere. You know, we're critical thinkers. We do the research. We have groups. We have radio shows, you know, things like that. And so we're on it. So it's obvious to us. But the nation's not hearing it or seeing those glitches. You know, the issue with the veterans, you know, breaking the barriers down. And then Obama goes out and puts bigger barriers up. And Gohmert did some research on this, and that those memorials, which are open to the public, they're open, they're outside. And during the 95 during the Gingrich shutdown, the Gingrich-Clinton battle, those memorials were still open. And so if you know the facts and you're following it,
mm-hmm.
you look at it and you're going, oh, my God, this is insanity. These people are freaking evil. You know,
well,
but in mainstream media, you ain't going
to
hear nothing. Yeah, you're never going to hear anything in mainstream media. So that's the battle we're fighting. You know, we don't know where this is going to go. I don't trust Boehner as far as I can throw him, you know, on anything. Unfortunately, he's you know, siding with the Republicans because they've risen up and they're
right.
standing strong. But at any moment, that guy can turn left. Any moment.
No, I was going to say, I seen an article today that was talking about that he was in some backroom deals about having the Congress and the Senate, of course, waived from having to get Obamacare. You figure if it's so great, how come the House and the Senate and the President aren't under those laws? You know, that's one of the points that they were trying to make the night before the shutdown. Is that, well, hey, look, you know, one of our problems is that you're not abiding by the same laws that you're trying to put the rest of the people under.
Sorry, I was reading text hit me with a chat.
No, not a problem.
Well, the thing, I mean, not text, but Rex, but, God, losing it, man. We were on did a show last night, too. But the thing that you're talking about with did you hear, I think it was the same thing I was thinking of. Is Boehner in this backroom deal, you know, there's actually, you know, Reid let the email or whatever out that showed Boehner's main guy saying, hey, we don't want this to get out. That's what makes it bad. You know, it's one thing when they say something and said, hey, here's why I said it. It's another one they go, don't tell anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So this really makes Boehner look bad. And I mean, I can't think of anything that would make me happier in my life than to see Boehner replaced with somebody of character like Gohmert or whatever. You know, there's other guys too, you know, but a senior, you know, real conservative, but somebody's got standing. But I don't know how that would play right now and, you know, in the middle of the battle. But who knows? You know, it's that thing. Do you get rid of your leadership in the middle of the game? And is it better off long term, you know, or short term, do you stick with them and hope they don't screw you? But I can guarantee you that with John Boehner's history, which we've gone over multiple times in our time we've known each other, that somewhere along the line there's a screw job coming, and you just read a letter, you know, or an article or whatever. And if you have a link of that, it'd be cool.
Oh, well, actually, it's a hand letter that that someone I personally know who works for a union, and well, you know, they don't work for the union, but the union's, you know, in their business, and I'll just read the rest of it. We can
go ahead. I'm going to mute for a second.
Sure. It says, I'm trying to find my place. Yeah, well, I'll just start from the beginning because I didn't get that much in it. It says, to all participants and eligible dependents, you are recently received a notice from your employer describing the new health insurance marketplaces, previously referred to as exchanges, created as part of the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. That notice described how the marketplaces will work, and noticed that you may be eligible for premium tax credits to help pay for coverage. The trustees feel that it's important to provide you with this notice to give you additional information on the marketplaces and how your participation in the plan impacts these new options. Most importantly, the trustees want to assure you that your eligibility for coverage under the plan is not affected by the existence of such marketplaces. As long as you continue to meet the plan's eligibility requirements, you remain eligible for coverage under the plan. As was described in the notice from your employer, the marketplaces are intended to be online exchanges where anyone can shop for, compare, and ultimately purchase insurance coverage. The marketplace will accept application for coverage, determine eligibility for premium tax credits. That's the part I think is real important in here. Cost-sharing reductions, determine Medicaid and CHIP eligibility, and enroll people for coverage. The coverage provided by the plan, and that's the plan that's provided by work, is what they mean by the plan, provides minimum value under the federal government's guidelines. If the plan's coverage is also deemed affordable to you under the government guidelines, you will not be eligible to receive any premium tax credits. In addition, if your dependent is eligible for coverage on the plan, he or she may also be ineligible for premium tax credits through the marketplace and the plan's coverage is deemed affordable to you under the government's guidelines. If you choose to decline plan coverage and instead purchase coverage through the marketplace, you will be solely responsible for paying the entire cost of the coverage you purchase through your marketplace. Neither your employer nor your plan will pay any portion of the cost of marketplace coverage. Additionally, because the coverage is not offered through your employer, you will pay for the coverage on an after-tax basis. Your employer's contribution to the plan on your behalf as part of your wage package will continue even though you receive no plan coverage. You do not need to purchase coverage through the marketplace. If you are currently enrolled in the plan, you will continue to receive plan coverage for as long as you continue to meet the plan's eligibility requirements and pay the required self-pay contribution if applicable. The trustees recognize the ACA is complex and confusing. If you have any questions, blah, blah, blah. Well, one of the things I think is really important here for you know, a lot of folks to take into account is this portion where it says your employer's contribution to the plan on your behalf as part of your wage package will continue even though you will receive no plan coverage. And the reason they put that in, of course, is part of compensation, you get wage and then there's benefits. And so let's say if you're making $13 an hour and, you know, working at one of these places and actually you're making more, you know, closer to $15 or $17 an hour because the other, you know, $2 to $4 is going towards your benefits. Even though you're not using those benefits, you're not going to be compensated. So now you're not going to be making $15 to $17 an hour now because you opted out of those benefits. You're still going to be making the same, you know, $13 an hour wage that you were making prior to that. So I think that's important because, you know, you're not even going to be using the benefit from work. You might as well go ahead and use it instead of going and opting to the Obamacare. So,
well, let me ask you this question, though. I don't mean to interrupt you, but
no,
when,
go
you
ahead,
read that when you read that, we're, you know, when you read that legal marble jarble, it's hard for,
mm-hmm.
you know, my brain to absorb it. But one of the things, why would don't unions supply insurance now? Don't you get insurance? Don't you get insurance when you're part of a union? Are they saying they're kicking you off, or are they giving people an option in that letter?
Well, in the letter, what they're doing is saying, you know, if you're already a part of the plan, if you're already getting the insurance through the company, and they negotiate about what kind of insurance and things that they that they're offered, the company offers them through the union. What they're saying is that, you know, you could keep basically keep the plan as you have it, or you can get the exchanges, you know, or buy it, you know, online, or you could keep what you have. Now, if you choose to get Obamacare, basically, then you may be able to qualify for tax credits to help you pay for your premiums based on your eligibility, of course, based on how much money you make. And so, you could get on Obamacare and not even get a part of, you know, at least the way I read it, and get a part of the tax credits for it if they deem that you can afford to pay the premium in full. But I say, why bother doing that? Because, one, you're not going to if you make too much, you're not going to get the tax credit. And, two, it's part of your wage package, as that said, so you're not going to be making more money because you're not taking advantage of the benefits, so you're pretty much just losing out. And three, I think that, you know, it's kind of a ploy in which, you know, they're going to get all these folks on here thinking they're going to be eligible for tax credits to help them pay for their premiums, and that's going to pretty much force, you know, the Republicans' hands to have to fund, eventually, Obamacare, because you're going to have all these ticked-off people who think they're going to be getting money, getting these tax credits to help to pay for their premiums, and then if they don't, because the Republicans, you know, defund Obamacare, well, then who's going to make it look bad? I mean, it seems like it's just all about making, at least in this part, all about making the Republicans look bad, you know, and how they're trying to take money away from people.
Well, and I guess not being versed on every line item on 2,700 pages of a bill, and then all the other thousands of pages that are written, you know, in the HHS, you know, it's like, well, I don't remember anybody talking about getting tax credits. In fact, that was something that the Republicans wanted to do for everybody, you know, as a solution to the Obamacare debacle, you know, was give people, you know, open everything up, you know, cross state lines, you know, allow your insurance to go with you, you know, when you went from company to company, and to have tax credits so that people could afford this and go to a market-based solution. So I haven't heard anybody say you get tax breaks in Obamacare review up to this point.
No, I haven't heard anything on that. But it appears here that what's going to happen is that's where the cost of Obamacare, well, one of the costs of Obamacare is going to come from is to basically subsidize premiums is what it sounds like to me. It's for, of course, the people who they deem cannot afford it and will need the subsidies.
I wonder if that's set in stone or if that's some variable they can play with based on what their needs are and based on their need to sucker more people in. Because one of the things that I am seeing...
Mm-hmm, go ahead. I was going to say, that's what it seems like.
Well, one of the things that I've seen, you know, I've watched... I don't even want to admit this, but I've watched a lot of C-SPAN, and I've read hundreds of articles trying to get, you know, stay up on top of this because it's such a complex issue. But one of the things I'm starting to see is a little trend moving itself through this whole thing is that a lot of people are going to have to be, based on income, are going to be subsidized. So what we're doing is setting up not another, not a healthcare program, like I said when we first, you know, when I first came on. You know, this is going to be a welfare insurance program. It's almost like they're setting up another entitlement.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what it sounds like. Mm-hmm. Once folks start getting used to getting these tax credits in order to help them pay for the premiums, what's the next step is that, oh, well, you know, people are even having a hard time paying those premiums. We should probably go ahead and step in and just pay for all of their insurance. And then moving into the single-payer system. That's, you know, one way of doing it. And, of course, the other way is because, you know, people are going to be losing their full-time positions, in which they're not going to be able to get insurance through their company because they're not going to be eligible to get the insurance through the company. So, of course, what they're going to have to do is go through those online exchanges that, you know, eventually they'll get those, you know, tax credits too. But then once it's deemed that they can afford them, yet another way to move into the single-payer system.
Yeah, I think they want to crash it. You know, one of the things I've noticed, even though Obama gave the corporations a waiver for a year, basically, is all the articles that have come out with all the corporations and unions that are dumping their people anyway. And you're going like, well, I thought he just gave all these companies waivers. So if he did that and they're dumping people anyway, whether it's a story about FedEx, you know, dumping the spousal support, or whatever, the companies, I mean, insurance, it's twofold. One, it shows that insurance is going up anyway. Even though he's given them a waiver, everything is going up. We know, you know, they print this information out daily, and then you get on these shows, and the liberals say it's not true. I mean, you know, it's just mind-boggling when you watch these interviews. But what's happening is the corporation supposedly got a waiver, but everything is falling apart anyway and becoming more expensive. Companies are cutting back anyway, so they're cutting back on hours. What do we got? 70% of the jobs have been part-time under the Obama regime. And companies are cutting people back, laying people off, and cutting their benefits. So people are going to be – it's almost that whole thing. And I remember this way back when this first got passed. People who are strongly against it saying, you know, why would companies want to cover anything, you know what I mean, if they can get out from under it and shove you off onto these exchanges? Remember that conversation back then?
Yeah, yes, I do. And then Harriet brings up – I'm trying to find that for you, Harriet. I got your message there. I missed it. I see where you're saying unsure if federal government funds children cancer research. I missed what you're talking about, Harriet, on the depending on the income of the employee. I mean, that's what the letter was implying. Someone showed me and gave me, and that I guess it's going to be depending on, you know, if they feel like they can afford the health care or not, and if they feel like they can't. Then they're going to pay, which I find interesting. If they're worried about them affording the health care, it sounds like that the type of care, the health care, is pretty much going to be the same across the board. You know what I mean?
Well, it's more than that. I mean, it's going to be – you're going to be paying for stuff you don't want, and you're going to be paying more for it, and you're not going to be able to pay for stuff you really want. You know, I actually have something I'll read a little bit later. Somebody posted earlier of a guy who went online. And basically what he did was he, you know, started filming the whole thing out and picked a tier two, you know, I guess they got colors, you know, color coded, a tier two type plan. He has a pre-existing condition, type 1 diabetes. And all of a sudden he's like $600 a month with a $14,000 a year deductible.
Wow.
And then he opted out, and now check this out. He opted out, and immediately he was assessed a $4,000 fine
Oh my God!
He got an email at the end of the day, and if you ignore that fine and you own a house, they'll put a lien on your house.
They'll put a lien on your house.
And remember that people are saying no, this stuff isn't going to happen. Remember that IRS conversation that we have had, you know, with all this IRS stuff that's come out, you know. Let me see if I can find it. I mean, I gave you a quick overview of it, of the conversation. You know, stuff gets moved down the group. I've been away from it. But, you know, what it boils down to is the issue of, you know, why do we have all these new IRS agents? And with all this stuff that's gone on with the IRS, you know, again, mainstream media is ignoring this. They're ignoring it. They're ignoring, you know, Levin, and regardless of what anybody thinks of Levin, he had an incredible show today. And every once in a while, everybody gets it right one day in a dialogue. And he said, you look at the stuff that's going on with this national parks. You look at the stuff that the IRS is doing to the Tea Parties and conservative groups and Christian groups and, you know, the Graham ministry and all this stuff. Anybody that's opposed to that political party, and you look at that, and what you're seeing is what all of us fear the most in government. You know, and then what Levin said was so key. He said, now think about it. If you were in the middle of a major political battle like we are in this country right now, left versus right, so to speak, you know, status versus freedom, and government was control your health care, just microcosm that issue with the park onto your health care, or the issue with the IRS against the Tea Party groups or the conservative groups or the Christian groups, and then just overlay that over your life and your health.
No, they just control it.
If you got the wrong government, yeah, they control everything. That's the bottom line. That's what
every
is freaky
your life.
Freedom people are scared to death of. You know, the anarchists, Tea Party people, like Harry Reid calls it. You know, this is not America, and this isn't socialism. This is beyond that. This is the ugliest side of everything that we spent through the whole Cold War fighting against, you know, the whole fight of communism, and nobody will talk about it, Robert. You know, we're discussing it like this is about your health care. It's not about your damn health care. We have health care in this country. You know what I mean? And if you're dirt-ass poor, you're on Medicaid or Medicaid or whatever your state,
Medicaid,
you know,
right.
trickle-downs. Mm-hmm. Yeah, your state trickle-down system is, you know? And so, and why are they spending, you know, millions and millions and millions of dollars selling the hell out of this thing? I got a kick out of it tonight on Hannity. They put up a map, and they showed the states where the exchange computers crashed, and Kentucky, Rand Paul State, only 1% of the people that got on to sign up could get in and get their stuff finished. 1%.
That's incredible.
And then you got President Obama the other day going, hey, we're just like Apple. Yeah. Well, no, but what he said, we're like Apple, you know, just like anything. You put a new application out there and blah, blah, blah. And I'm thinking, number one, you're not like Apple. You're the freaking government. Most inefficient system there is in the world. Apple's a business, number one. You know, who has to make a profit or they fail. And number two, you've had over 3 years to freaking get your damn computers put together. You know, it doesn't take 3 years. If you get a 1% return, that's not a glitch. That's a failure, you know? Oh, my God.
A failure.
I mean, if I had a 10% failure rate as a contractor, I'd be out of business. 10%. You know, I mean, you know what I mean? If I had a 90% success ratio, I am not running efficiently. I have to have a 95 to 98% success ratio to be successful, to stay in business. You know, you can't fail that many times. They failed 99 out of 100 times in Kentucky alone.
Oh, and Harriet, here you go, Harriet. Yeah, she said the tax credit is rather new. I've a written copy from the Head Start program for employees, and she also has a question. Says, if Obamacare is not funded by the House, then how is Obamacare being funded? Well, that's a very good question right now. you know, it's probably not being funded. It's probably just going to be adding to the debt. And then when they have the debt ceiling debate, which is coming up in a couple of weeks, then they'll be having to add to that. Is my guess on it. Is, you know, so if they're not funding it right now, I mean, and that's the problem. I mean, they're having all these folks sign up, and they're saying, okay, all these folks sign up for this Obamacare. Well, if it's not funded, what the hell are they gonna do? I think, you know.
Well, here's another one for you. Rand Paul was on the other day. They're all been on a lot, but there was one interview that just, you know, I about fell out of my chair. He was being talked to, I think, by a liberal newscaster. You know, I got overlap going on right now in my brain. But he said, he goes, let me tell you how bad it is. Now, we're on Kentucky again, and I'm not Kentucky, you know, focused, but it just seems like two stories coming from Kentucky. He goes, we used to have 30 insurance companies in this state. He goes, we got two on the exchange, and one of them, he said, won't cover me when I'm out of state.
Oh, my God.
I mean, come on. You're talking about from 30 to 2 to 1. That's one option you have. That is not a success story, you know. And this is just – these are just a couple examples of hundreds of things that I've read or heard or seen on TV or on cable or, you know, YouTube or articles. I mean, just keeping up with the insanity. And the only reason that it even made it to this point was that the leftists own 99% of the airwaves.
Oh,
because
gosh,
they're
yeah.
burying this shit. They're burying this stuff.
And speaking of airwaves, I do have someone else would like to chime in. I believe this is our good friend Kelly, author of The Hidden Fourth Branch, with the website the same name, www.hiddenfourthbranch.com. And also one of the administrators of, I believe, Guardians for Liberty. And so thank you very much, Kelly. Is that you?
Well, hey, guys. Good to hear from you again, except for that last caller that was ranting and ranting. I mean, look, the problem is this other guy isn't willing to accept socialism / communism. I mean, woohoo, hippie, yay, you know, Obamacare is one step away from socialism. And the reason why I support socialism is because it works. No, really. It really works. See, what Stalin did was he killed 20 million people. After that, there was plenty of food and housing to go around. So, you know, and of course, doctors, too, you know. Doctors are a little more affluent, so they survive, you know. Not many doctors in the 20 million got killed. So, you know, it really does work, folks.
Was that a hint of sarcasm in there, Kelly?
Oh, a hint of sarcasm? Only slightly. I mean, there's another success story there with Mao, you know? Same thing. Plenty of food and housing to go around after you murder like 30 to 60 million people. So, anyway. But, yeah, you know, I have to tell you who's at fault here, folks. Who's at fault for the big showdown, the big... you know, government shutdown, it would be that Chris feller who's ranting. It would be you, Robert. It would be all the members of the Tea Party. You guys were mentioned exclusively by Harry Reid on the Senate floor that was the Tea Party. So I'm pointing my fingers at you, and I'm going to say, congratulations. I have a big grin on my face right now. Congratulations, because we have made an impact. You know, when our group... you know, those who have the Constitution and Tea Party, when we're mentioned on the Senate floor, you know we're having an impact, and I would encourage everybody to keep at it. So that's pretty exciting. And oh, by the way, I've got to tell you something else. You know, I went out for a mining adventure today, and the lights were on. Yes, the lights were on. And I came back tonight. Hey, wow, look, the lights are on still, you know. Brent Barrowing took over right after the shutdown. 9 o'clock, you know, he did this brilliant thing. Yeah, you know, we're going to go to Obamacare, but first we go to Seattle. Oh, look, the lights are on. And here's Philadelphia. How would you know? The lights are on there, too.
Yeah, I made the comment that night. I said, you know, I went to get a quick shower, and I flipped on the switch. The lights came on, I turned on the knob on the tub. The water came out. And I guess the government shutdown is such a horrible thing after all. You know, they kept talking about the 800,000 people. Oh my, you know, Harry Reid is, oh my gosh, we got these 800. And it's, you know, you don't want people in the night, you know, be able to get their incomes, you know. But, you know, when, you know, I'm a big, you know, Star Trek, Spock fan, but the needs of the many outweighs the needs of the few, you know, on one. But you talk about 800,000 folks that would be, you know, affected of these government workers. But look at the millions and millions of people. Look at the economy that, you know, that's going to be affected with Obamacare. I mean, it's going to be a hell of a lot more than 800,000 people. But of course, you know, but he also doesn't want to help the children out be able to get those treatments either. You know, why would we want to do that? Is Harry Reid's quote.
Well, I find it interesting that they call the government people that are not going to go to work to call them non-essential. Well, if they're non-essential, why don't you have like 100 year parole on the non-essential? You know, I like the idea of government actually suffering. What we do here in the private sector, we have, you know, sometimes business is great and you're working, you know, 10, 11 o'clock at night. Sometimes it's real slow and you're wondering where your next meal is coming to. I've got, you know, I'm an engineer. Terrible, terrible poverty in the county I'm in. But, you know, it's just like, good. Government can start to realize the impact they have on people's life by all their silly, endless regulations that are killing business. I mean, what a concept. Taste of their own medicine. I mean, that, you know, oh, and look, the Republicans, under pressure of the Tea Party, they are requiring that Congress also has to be subject to Obamacare in order to pass the budget. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I mean, I would guess most doctors take their own medicine and their own prescriptions, but, you know, what a concept. Congress has to actually be part and subject to the regulations they pass. Huh.
Well, and they must also think how, you know, they must think that they're, you know, pretty vital because they're still getting paid. You know, the politicians are still getting paid. And if they want to show how much they care for the people, how about if they take all the money that they get and hand it over to those folks who are being, you know, furloughed or what have you, and they're not getting the pay that they're talking about. And then, of course, the Republicans, you know, because, you know, they're, you know, the House that carries the purse strings, you know, decide on what's getting funded, and reads like, who do they think they are? You know, well, the House of Representatives. It's the most direct representative body that this country has, at least on the federal level.
Yeah.
So they're the ones who pick what, you know, the president, I guess, and, you know, I believe that's what the Rand Paul Scrooge said, you know, gets to spend. And so they're trying to, go ahead, Kelly.
Well, yeah, you know, I feel really sorry for Dianne Feinstein, or was it Nancy Pelosi, or both. You know, because of the shutdown, they're not going to get one of these.
She looks like she's always spaced out. Go ahead. I had to get that out. She was just eyes are all bugged out, and she could barely talk.
Yeah, well, because of the shutdown, I feel really sorry for her, because she's probably going to lose one trip this year in you know, the all-expense, 747 jet. Private jet back to her district. I mean, you know, she's going to really – she might have to go coach, you know, on an actual airplane with normal folk. I mean, that's really tough for her to endure.
No more Botox, isn't it?
Yeah. So it's just, you know, it's just really hard on her, you know, this custom airliner for herself, you know. I feel sorry for her.
It's okay, man. She'll be all right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I remember when we first had the shutdown, and that, you know, they're all, you know, gathering and for their press, you know, press conference, and, you know, she could barely talk, and she's acting like she's all choked up. And I thought it was funny where, and Chris, I'd like to bring you in on this, because maybe my memory doesn't serve me correctly, but she said that, you know, when it came to this today, the statuary or whatever, it made me think. This is
Kelly. Are you digging a hole while he's talking?
Are you digging a hole while you're there, Kelly? Are you
digging? I'm digging a hole. No, I'm not digging a hole because I'm not a politician.
Sounds like you're talking in a bucket.
No, I'm actually processing some material. See if we got any germ in it.
You sound really muffled there, Kelly. But anyway, while Kelly, while you fix that over there, I remember Pelosi saying, you know, I was thinking of George Washington when he warned us about two parties, I'm paraphrasing here, two parties fighting each other the way that we are. I'm like, I don't think my memory remembers that. I thought he just warned us about parties, period, not two parties fighting against each other the way that Republicans and Democrats are. Am I wrong on that, Chris?
You know, they take crap out of context, just like they do the Bible and the Constitution and separation of church and state. You know what I mean? Whatever works that the media can gleam onto to make a point. Anybody who's ever studied the founding of this country and the early days, the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists went at each other daily. In fact, they went out and bought independent newspapers so they could just smear the crap out of each other. It's always been, it's just politics. I mean, hell, Caesar got stabbed on the floor, you know? I mean, it's just the way they play things. You know, this battle, what fires me up, and I've gone through, through the primary, through the election, and now we're going into 2014. You know, I don't want to do this stuff at all. I'm not into politics. I'm just trying to save my country. But and we go through waves of excitement. And I remember the gun battle. You know, I call it the gun battle. That's probably not the right terminology, but you know, the Second Amendment battle. And it was really what I like is when people get off their butts, get involved, get educated, and fight for their damn rights. Reagan said it so well when he talked about, you know, we're one generation away. Well, we're that generation Reagan was talking about. I have watched secular humanism and socialism creep up on this country most of my life. My mom was a history sociology major, very intelligent, double master's degree, so I had this input, you know, growing up, and so I was aware of things. You know, I had that critical thinking and connecting the dots and seeing the trends and changes in our society, you know. Of course, I was a child in the 60s. I was born, you know, in 58, so I don't remember the 60s, but, you know, I remember the trends, the Vietnam War, the Reagan, the Carter era, you know, and parents who would, you know, set me down and explain what was going on, and so I was always aware. But I was never involved in national politics because I've always lived in strong states where it was you, your community, and your state. And now, you know, this is the first time that I've really stood up and said, you know, maybe I'm older, more mature, I don't know, you know, dumber, you know, less mature. I guess it depends on who's listening to me. But, you know, now I'm going, holy smokes, we're here. You know what I mean? We're at that point that we talked about our whole lives, you know, growing up through the Cold War. You know, America's going to be destroyed from within. We'll never have to fire a shot. You know, the guy that used to be the Socialist Party saying, I'm dissolving the party because we don't need the Socialist Party anymore because we've taken over the Democrats. You know what I mean? I mean, all those little things that you remember, you know, that you were educated on, and we're here. It's now. It's not tomorrow. And everybody, I really believe, I saw the Tea Party movement, and it was really cool, but I think the biggest mistake they made is they got there. Now, the states have done pretty good, you know, that have been, have, you know, good, you know, Republican governors in the House and Senate. They've made reforms, and they're doing well. But when you look at the national politics, you know, the Tea Party, they went in there, and they lined up behind their leadership. You know, you're supposed to get in there, and you're supposed to be nice, and your time will come. And if you lick my boots, then I'll put you on a committee. But don't ever cross me. You know what I mean?
Right.
And they got in behind the leadership. Now what you're seeing is people taking leadership for themselves, and that is what I like, because that's what fires people up. You know, when Cruz when Rand Paul did his filibuster and really started taking a stand and defining himself, when Cruz did his thing, his defining himself, and they're standing up, you see it's contagious. You see it in the House, you see it in the Senate, you see it on social media, you see it in the news, you see people taking sides. You know what, folks? That's America. Here's the problem. Republicans are too busy raising their families, working their job, trying to be good citizens. Most liberals are professional politicians. They're involved in your local state, you know, communities. They have embedded themselves into this system for 50 years, and they're in power right now, and they're pushing as hard as they can. That's where we're at today. We're there. It's no longer a futuristic point.
Sorry, I babbled. Oh, no. There you go. No, that's cool. It's all right there, Chris. And then we got Ava, Indiana. And I agree, Ava puts in the check, says, I am interested in solutions as well as the identification of the problems. The solutions are, question mark. And then
solutions to what? Which issue?
I guess solutions, that's a very good point. We can bring him in. For the people who have just come in listening to the show, you are welcome to call in at 347-945-7428 to chime in and join the discussion. We do keep the mics open here, so go ahead and call in if you like, or we can just bring it in the chat. But we can have a better conversation, I think, for people to call in. But anyway, continues the solution Ava has. I have my own one-size-fits-all solution, but it presupposes the American citizens wake up, and we've talked about that a lot on the show here, Chris, and they don't even have to take – you know we have. We said, my gosh, you know, so many people are sleeping or they're watching unreality shows instead of, you know, doing – I know with a lot of research yourself to, you know, do. And, you know, now I do a lot myself, and it says they don't even have to take more than 1 man-hour of action, but it won't be done. We got somebody in here. This is, I don't know if the person's serious or funny. It says, support a communist America comrade. Okay, well, we do enjoy a laugh here at times. Hugh Jalecki Sausage Politics, that's the guy's name, I'm presuming. So, I like the play on words there. That's kind of funny. We'll see where it goes, comrade. And you too, Jalecki, as long as you're polite, you can call in if you'd like as well. So let's go ahead and talk about some solutions. Kelly, what do you think some solutions are? Of course, people do have to wake up and stop watching all the unreality reality shows and people singing and, you know, on islands.
Hey, I like the duck callers. Come on.
So, that definitely, you know, we're all welcome. But go ahead. But on a serious note, Kelly, what do you think? I mean, obviously people need to wake up, and we need people in this country to wake up en masse. But like Chris made a great point. And I agree at this point. And, you know, you have the people who actually want to do change, bring things more towards the right just because it gets back to the center. Well, we're busy, you know, raising our families, working. Some people working two jobs, you know, or both people in the family working a job. And so,
some people thinking about one to work.
Yeah. And I think the government is trying to make it so that people are so busy just trying to take care of their own and take care of their families that they cannot pay attention to what the government is doing. I think that there's a purpose behind that, which makes it even tougher. But we definitely have to have people get more involved, even though they are busy taking care of their own, whether they have their businesses or what have you. So what do you think, Kel? I don't see.
I think he fell in that hole. I think he fell in that
hole, Kelly. Well, Kelly, when you come back, we'll, there you go. And I do see Ava is on the line, and we'll have Kelly, you respond, and then we'll bring Ava in. Go ahead, Kelly.
Oh, well, I'm just kind of scratching my head sometimes how we even got here in the first place. It's unbelievable. And watching Fox News a little bit today. People were trying to enter in, because you can enter and get online, you know, for all these exchanges and whatever,
yeah.
And the software isn't working, and people are just beyond frustrated. I'm like, well, yeah, of course
it
you're
was
frustrated.
It was 1% in Kentucky, Kelly, 1%. We're able to
you
get
mean
through
that they can technically get through it, 1% actually tried?
No, 1% that technically got their shit done, their stuff done, excuse my French.
No,
okay,
that's not too bad of a word. Go ahead,
I mean, yeah, so there's stories of people trying, they can't get in, and they're frustrated. And they're like, well, of course you're going to be frustrated. What do you expect? It's the government.
Exactly. That's a perfect example of what things are to come. Seriously, if you can't even sign up without a lot of, you know, BS, then what do you think you're going to do if you're actually part of the exchange?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if there's time, probably in the after show, I want to tell you something that's kind of mind-blowing. Somebody explained it to me about healthcare. I just kind of got to wait a little bit, but it's like, oh my gosh, it's some fascinating stuff.
Yeah, definitely. We'll bring that into the extended version. And for those who are new here to the show, the extended version, we go live until midnight Eastern time. But many times we go into extended period, and that would be for about another hour after the live portion of the show. But it's all archived for folks to listen to later. And folks want to listen into the extended version, you would have to call in at 347-945-7428. And if the gentleman don't mind, I'll go ahead and open up the mic and have Ava come on. What do you think? I'll take that as good. All right. So
sorry,
Ava,
my wife
Indiana,
is talking to me.
I've opened up your mic. Your mic is live. How are you?
Okay. I'm using Ava's name because that's my
Ava,
friend who has
okay.
who has her own show. My name is Joe. So what I wanted to say was this. 1 man-hour, that's all it takes. You don't have to worry about sending out flyers, going from door to door. And it's so simple that it just escapes everybody. Here's the solution. On polling day, you get into your car, you go down to the polls, and you just vote in any independent. You don't have to know who he or she is, just any independent. And the reason why is because what we have now are these career politicians who have been in Congress for about 10, 20 years. They've been inundated with communist philosophies, authoritarian philosophies, stupid treasonous ideologies, and they're not going to change. They're power-hungry career freaks. So even if the independent is the biggest geek from hell, he can't be any worse than the people we have now. So if we do a nice full broom wipeout of all the Democrats and Republicans and just vote in just the independents, it's got to be better than what we have today. Simple.
Well, just received a message here from Facebook from Ann. Thank you very much, Ann, for sending me this article. I appreciate it. And so it's a quick one, and so I will read it. And so it says, Obamacare can be defunded without Senate approval. It says, when the House passed legislation to defund Obamacare but would keep the government running through mid-December, the Senate, led by Senate Majority Leader Senator Harry Reid, stated that they would not budge on Obamacare, and the legislation was defeated. On Monday, Dr. Harold Peace, an expert on the United States Constitution, stated that the authority in dealing with Obamacare funding belongs to the U.S. House, not the U.S. Senate, and that is the House is doing all was wrong. Peace said everything hinged upon funding, which was given exclusively to the House of Representatives, the only power that they alone had. Peace went on to say, all bills for raising revenue shall originate in the House of Representatives, but the Senate may propose or concur with amendments as on other bills. To fund anything, in this case Obamacare, first approval is required by the House of Representatives. If that does not happen, taxpayer money cannot be spent. The people through the representatives to Congress have determined after a 3-year closer scrutiny of the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare, that it does not protect the patient, is not affordable, and is not even workable. Hence, it is in the interest of the vast majority of the people, needs to be defunded. When the United States Supreme Court ruled on Obamacare in 2012, Chief Justice Roberts' stance on Obamacare coincides with the intent of the U.S. Constitution explained by Peace and the powers between the House and Senate. According to the Supreme Court ruling, Obamacare cannot be implemented. It is not considered the law of the land, contrary to Democrats' claims. Bubba Atkinson of the Independent Journal Review wrote, Chief Justice Roberts actually ruled the mandate relative to the Commerce Clause was unconstitutional. That is how the Democrats got Obamacare going in the first place. This is critical. His ruling means Congress can't compel American citizens to purchase anything ever. The notion is now officially and forever unconstitutional, as it should be. Next, he stated that because Congress doesn't have the ability to mandate, it must, to fund Obamacare, rely on its power to tax. Therefore, the mechanism that funds Obamacare is a tax, said Atkinson. He struck down as unconstitutional the Obamacare idea that the federal government can bully states into complying by yanking their existing Medicare funding. Liberals, through Obamacare, basically said to the states, comply with Obamacare, or we will stop existing funding. Roberts' rule said that is a no-no. When the House attached Obamacare to the legislation in funding the government, it made a mistake in doing so, and the funding of Obamacare should have been separate, thereby giving the Senate no power in denying the House request to defund Obamacare. Peace said House opposition to funding Obamacare would have been far more powerful if made to stand alone bill, not attached to general funding, but it is not. Stand alone, having no other parts, would have left the Senate no wriggle room or compromise room once it went to them, nor would there be for the Joint Conference Committee thereafter that reconciles any differences between the two houses. There would be nothing to reconcile. Obamacare is merely defunded. Still, the intent of the Founding Fathers was to give the people, through their House of Representatives, the power collectively to say no to any proposed federal tax, which she is decidingly doing. If Obamacare is removed from the government budget, presented and voted on as a separate bill, Obamacare can be defunded by the House and the Senate, and the President has no constitutional authority to override the House decision. And thank you very much, Ann, for sending me that via Facebook. And I appreciate that, and I do like to bring on things that people offer for me to read here. So I will bring that over to you, Chris, and then back to Joe, and then we'll bring in Kelly. Go ahead, Chris.
Well, it's kind of hard to listen to somebody read an article and then get all the details of it because that requires some cross-research, you know, to find out. Because there's some pretty smart people out there fighting this battle, and they're not talking about this as an option. So I don't know. I'm not a constitutional attorney. I'm not a political, genius. So why hasn't that been done? Why hasn't that issue of when John Roberts called it a tax when it wasn't a tax and Obamacare started in the Senate, and why was when they turned it into a tax? You know what I mean?
Hey, Chris,
why was that never taken up?
Well, real quick.
Kelly, is that you? Are you out of your hole?
I want to call foul right now. I do not like the idea. Well, I'm not a constitutional attorney. I don't understand it perfectly. And I hate the argument that is, you know, there's only 9 people that can tell what is and is not constitutional. It's the Supreme Court justices. I hate that. You know why? Because when I'm voting, I have to know the Constitution. I decide what is and is not constitutional. The Founding Fathers wrote the Constitution simply so we could vote people out of office. I'm chiding you, of course, with affection there, Chris, but please don't take up that argument. It's really important that we be the judge of the Constitution when we vote. That's kind of why I just had to call Red Flag there. And, okay, I'm sorry, I just did my little thing, so go ahead.
Well, yeah, but I'm talking about in the specific situation where John Roberts went in there and said it won't work under the Commerce Clause as forcing people to purchase a product, but as a tax, the government has the right to tax, so it's constitutional. I'm saying there, I'm saying specifically, I'm not a constitutional attorney, so and that was all passed at a, you know, at a very high level on the land, so I don't know the argument that that article is talking about. I don't know how to dispute that, is what I'm saying. Hello?
You have a really good point there, too.
Go ahead.
I mean, I read it simply. There's no direct taxes.
Look, nobody knows.
Yeah, they changed everything, and
nobody knows the Constitution.
This.
That's plain and simple. Nobody knows the Constitution, okay? The American populace, even back then, didn't know the Constitution. The American populace today, they don't know the Constitution. It's not written that simply. When you take a look at Article 1, Section 6, General Welfare Clause, Commerce Clause,
right.
Then you take a look at the Supremacy Clause and Eminent Domain, what I get pissed off about is the fact that people say, well, the forefathers' intentions were. No, they didn't have generally good intentions. If they had generally good intentions, there wouldn't have been a many-month-long debate between the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists.
Mm-hmm.
The Anti-Federalists
exactly.
Warned us way in advance of the clauses in the Constitution. Not that they were going to be misused, or rather misinterpreted, but that the clauses there, as they stood, were going to be not even bastardized, but just used as those particular clauses could be used by people who had authoritarian intentions. Just plain and simple.
Yeah, yeah,
okay.
And you're absolutely correct on that. In fact, the whole Constitutional Convention was a nightmare. They almost had another revolution at that time because that's what got us the Bill of Rights. Because there were several states going, no way we're giving you this much power.
Absolutely. And then what
I
learned, and I don't know if this is
most
true.
Most of us here are pretty aware of that. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I'm not sure if this is true because this kind of seems to fall into the area of Twilight Zones, that the Bill of Rights were actually put into the Constitution a year and a half after it was ratified. Is that true?
Kelly?
No,
ratification was only happened because the Bill of Rights were put in.
No,
then that's
the
common
There was a long process there.
Well, that's the common thought, of course. That's the common thought. That, of course, in 1789, the Constitution was ratified and everything was complete, and then everything had ever been followed from that time on. But somebody who is a devout, well, he wouldn't call himself I guess he does call himself a scholar. He's a layman who calls himself a scholar. He said a year and a half later, the Bill of Rights was then made part of the Constitution. I didn't follow up on it. I didn't do my research. But even so,
answer if you want to hear the answer.
Huh?
Go ahead.
The answer? Okay.
Kelly's good at this stuff.
Okay, I researched it by state when they ratified the Constitution and then when they ratified the Bill of Rights. The ninth state had to ratify the Constitution, and that was done, let me see number nine here, 1789, so 88 it was proposed, 87 proposed, ninth state was in 1789. Okay, so 87 proposed, 89 the Constitution was passed, and then all of a sudden there became these complaints that, hey, where's the Bill of Rights? And so James Madison introduced the Bill of Rights in the first session of Congress, then they sent it off to the states. It's kind of like this, you know, the easiest way to remember this is, hey, we got a Constitution, guys. Oh, you want a Bill of Rights? Whoops, sorry about that. We kind of just, we'll get it out to you. And they did. And so in 1791, the
correct
Bill of Rights was ratified.
So in other words, the short answer was yes, it did take a year and a half.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it was, when they were going through the debate process, the Bill of Rights were agreed upon. In other words, that Constitution wasn't going to get through if Madison didn't get those Bill of Rights agreed upon.
But apparently it was agreed upon.
It was
ratified in 1789 without the Bill of Rights, and it was agreed upon without the Bill of Rights, and then somehow it had to have been somehow forced, coerced, or cajoled back into that agreement.
Right. Doesn't that sound a lot like today?
Well, yeah.
You know
what I
mean?
Yeah, I don't
you know,
have
like,
any.
Like, yeah, it's like Obama, you know, they complain that the Republicans won't fund,
mm-hmm.
you know, anything right now. And then they're talking about it's the law of the land and the Supreme Court and all this crap.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got a president over there that's changed a bill illegally, like somewhere between 14 and 17 times, depending on the person you talk to, you know, on his own at his desk. And that's not his job. And then and so it seems like no matter what we do or how well this was put together, there's always people pushing the edge of the legal issue. And then there's always a battle over that legal issue. And it isn't always what's right gets done. It's, you know, whoever wins the game.
Yeah. So that's why I'm not a devotee of the Constitution, okay, for the reasons that I cited before. They leave it too open for people who don't even have good intentions to take too much of an advantage of the clauses in there. I could have written up a better Constitution. Okay? I think most people in America, if they really thought about it, if they were awakened to what's happening to their rights, could come up with a better Constitution. As a matter of fact.
No, I was just going to say it's hard to say because it is a very complex, you know, it's a, going on a 300-year history of this thing and trying to, you know, go back to the original intent. And, you know, people argue, you know, intent all the time. And I tend to side with the anti-federalists more than not.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a little bit more that direction. But, you know, the bottom line is man is corrupt and man is selfish and man, you know, it just never seems to function well in a group. There's always people wanting to take control. There were nationalists and there were Tories in those days that wanted to duplicate what England had done. You know, they were very happy with that system.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have the knowledge. I mean, they had the knowledge of the world and the wisdom of the world and, you know, Greece and Rome and things to build off of, but they didn't have the extent of data that we have today where information can flow so fast. And it's easy for us to sit here today and look back and go, oh, they screwed up. But, you know, back in 1750, it was a different world. You know, it was pretty revolutionary, you know, in its time.
Mm-hmm. But they didn't need technology then.
Real quick, gentlemen, one thing Terry brought up, just so you bring in here. She puts in Article 1, Section 2, the House of Representatives. Shall choose their speaker and other officers and have the sole power of impeachment. And I know one of the gentlemen who was going to come in tonight, but I guess he got held up, was James Neighbor from the Overpasses for Obama's Impeachment. I'm sure he would like to have commented on that. But we've got the other gentleman. But I did want to bring that up because, well, let's be honest, Harry asked me. So if anyone
wants
to comment on that
about
as well.
What about my solution about just going to the polls and just voting for any blind independent?
Well, I mean, it's a great idea, but
anybody you don't know.
People are going to, I mean, it's a great idea, but it's trying to convince people to vote for the smaller number is always going to be a battle across the land.
Yeah.
The third parties have that problem as
mm-hmm.
it is now. You
Wait,
know, the Libertarian Party and the Constitution Party, you know, they're only pulling, you know, 2 million of the total vote, no matter how, and they have some great people that run, and it's just
yes,
a slow process to get, you know, to get people to step across the line and go vote for the other guy.
They're
because
extremely
they want,
slow. That's why
yeah.
I said
well,
a presupposes of people waking up, and even though we're awake, a lot of people are awake, they're not going to take action.
Well, and the thing is, the Libertarian Party's been around 40 years, Constitution Party's been around 20 years, and they barely pulled, you know, so close to a little over 2 million votes.
That's right.
You know, so people are afraid to vote that other alternate party and lose to the bad guy, you know, whoever the bad guy is. If you're on the Democrats, it's the Republican you're fighting. If you're on the right, it's the Democrat you're fighting. You know,
yeah, but
that
that's
whole
also,
split the vote.
I know, but that's also doublespeak. 1984 mind control, because if you're a Democrat or Republican, you have a 50-50 chance of losing anyway. So when those people say, well, I don't want to lose, it's not a popularity contest. You have to vote your conscience. And when I tell people...
Right.
You...
No, he talks about that a lot. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. So then you've already got my argument down.
Yeah, we've done tons of shows on this. Especially during the 2012 election. It's like you have to vote your conscience. You know, I mean, I know that I had a lot of folks who were, frankly, a lot of friends who were mad at me because I didn't vote for Romney. I was like, there's no way. I mean, I didn't vote for Obama either. I voted for Virgin Good of the Constitution Party because I felt like, yeah, you got to vote your conscience. But, you know, I almost lost my point, is that one of the, I think another good idea is to, for primaries, I mean, you have the primaries coming up for people who are running, you know, get rid of those, you know, establishment running Republicans if you're on the right, and then when the primaries come up, get rid of them then, and then you can have some true conservative, you know, if one use the ballot box to try to make change, is, you know, do it during the primary season when you can get these establishments, these rhinos out with people who are running against them. And then, you know, if you have more conservatives, actual true conservatives running, then you have a better chance if you want to use legislative and voting as a way to make change to do it that way.
Well, Ted Cruz was assigned. There was a guy who was so far behind, he was outspent 5-1, and he went out and he had the message, and he was the underdog. You know, and he's he's a fighter, you know, and you know, he's probably the most attacked man in Congress now.
I mean, they're even doing opposition. You know? I mean, people within his own party were doing opposition research, you know, on him.
Yeah, well, that was, we know who that was. That was Karl Rove.
Well, anyway, guys, I'm going to let you guys go, okay?
Yeah. Take it easy. All right, man. All right, buddy.
Well, thank you very much for calling in, Joe, and you're welcome always to call in again. So thank you very much.
Did Kelly fall in his hole again?
Are you falling your hole again there, Kelly?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, great.
Yeah, we found gold.
Well, I'd like to bring in and also see someone. Okay, Ava left the chat, but I do see Flycatch. I want to welcome you there on the show.
Yeah.
I've seen you on there a few times before. And for anyone else who's just came into the show to listen in, if you'd like to call in to chime in, you can at 347-945-7428. But for those who want to listen into the extended version, because you will not be able to hear it, if you're not on the line in about, wow, I can't believe it's 25 minutes. Yeah, already.
Okay.
It's already in the midnight here, about 20 minutes call as well. And so one thing that I do want to touch on, cause, you know, I have it here in the top of the show, is I want us to move over to the debt ceiling. It's probably one of our favorite topics because they're talking about, oh, my gosh, you should have waited to have this kind of fight when, you know, the debt ceiling came up and they can handle Obamacare with that, which I disagree. I mean, I think that's
the
tactic now that we're here, used now, but instead of waiting for the debt ceiling. But, I mean, that's looming. I mean, that's a debate that's going to be a couple of weeks away. And, I mean, hell, if we could get rid of this Obamacare, I think that'd be do much for lowering the debt, you know, and the debt ceiling. Perhaps we wouldn't even have to raise it off if we get rid of Obamacare.
Oh, yeah, we will. $1 trillion will barely cover what they got going on now.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, to raise the debt ceiling, we've talked about this at length, Chris and Kelly, about, you know, the continuing, you know, raising debt, oh, and how catastrophic it's going to be if we don't, you know, things like that. I mean, when is it going to be, you know, spending cuts versus raising the debt ceiling? I mean,
right after Bernanke quits printing money, there's when all your cuts are happening because it's all going to crash. So there's your solution.
Yep, pretty cut and dry there, Chris. There you go.
Well, I mean, Bernanke's tried to taper off printing several times, and the market's totally freaked out. He didn't know what he started. The Federal Reserve has always been, you know, none of us on this show like the Federal Reserve. We've studied this extensively, but, you know, from TARP to the bailout to QE1, 2, and QE Infinity, which we're on right now, QE3, you know, the Fed has a $3.6 trillion balance sheet on us right now. So, and they're throwing $85 billion a month into the market. All that crap that's going on in the stock market that everybody is all, oh, look, the stock market's up. Well, yeah, they're all trading funny money. You know, it's all printed money. There's no value to it. They're just playing. And every time he's tried to taper off of this machine, off this monster that he started with all this printing and infusing of money into the marketplace, not to mention the 15-plus trillion they dumped into the European market, you know, that to balance out the inflation that nobody really has felt yet. Yeah, milk is up, you know, 15, 20%, everything seems to have risen, but the real correction won't come until they quit giving away funny money at almost no interest rate. The Fed is printing this money and dumping it at a tiny fraction of what it should be in the interest rate. And the moment they raise interest rates, the whole market's going to react. We have a bigger bubble right now in the debt ceiling bubble and the bond market bubble than we had with the housing market, and it's all occurred in the last 4 years, and nobody has talked about it. So that correction's coming. You know, you got to figure maybe 50 cents on the dollar value, you know, within by the time it settles out of what we have now or less, depends on who you talk to. Well, that was a showstopper.
Well, I'll talk about the housing crisis.
Yeah, well, you and I both are in it. I mean, you know, we both have suffered from it.
Well, yeah. I mean, Kelly here, basically what happened was it was the Community Reinvestment Act
mm-hmm.
that, oh, we got to help the poor mm-hmm. get into a home. And then it was, actually, there's a triple whammy involved in this.
Yeah,
one was the Community Redevelopment Act. Yeah, oh, yeah, let's help the poor people get homes. And then there was the Bank Modernization Act, which removed the Glass-Steagall Act, which was in the 30s.
Mm-hmm.
In the 30s, Congress realized, oh, my gosh, these big, powerful corporations have their hands on all these securities. You cannot allow banks to be in the stock market and everything else the way they were.
Yeah, high-risk investments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what I'm saying is, you know, banks could do all sorts of things that they could not do. They put up a wall,
right.
The Glass-Steagall Act. They removed that through the Bank Modernization Act. Actually, there's four whammies that happened here. Actually, about five. So we got the Bank Modernization Act. You got the Community Redevelopment Act. You had another factor, which was the mortgage default swap system, which was basically private people would put up a bunch of money to insure, it was insurance in case somebody defaulted, and then they were taking people that were not even eligible. I mean, warm and breathing, state your income, you get a loan. And that was from the private sector, but Congress did nothing about it. And then the fourth factor, which was huge, was I know a guy who was working, he's got a default judgment against three banks, him and a paralegal. Banks would do their own appraisals. Oh, by the way, bundle, let's go back to Freddie Mae and Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Anyway, that's number five. But number four, banks were able to have their own appraisal. In other words, a banker goes, hey, you know what, this guy, he wants to get a loan for $200,000 on his home or refi. We think it's worth $225,000. Yeah, a month later. Oh, hey, you want to keep your job? The same kind of house is worth $250,000, $300,000, $350,000, $400,000, okay? That's major in falsely inflating the price of a home.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got, well, what happened was...
turning houses into junk bonds, basically.
All sorts of factors, yeah. So then you
and
have...
And then the other one... Oh, sorry, I thought you were done with your list.
Well, I can keep going on this, but see, it affects my industry, you know, civil engineering. I mean, my gosh, it's a miracle that I'm even in this county anymore. But anyway, housing up, down, up, down. Let me throw one in,
and then I won't bug you. The other one was they would bundle up all these high-risk loans, and then they would sell them off in the market like junk bonds. And so they just kept selling these... you know, these loans, they just became this forever paper trail, you know, all across the world. It was like treated like a stock.
And
that was a huge one.
Right.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. All this is creating a massive rally, a massive bubble. And, of course, reason number six, the Federal Reserve was lowering their interest rate. What does that mean? It means you have more buying power. $1,000 a month will buy you a heck of a lot more home at a stupid 5% versus 7-8. I mean, all these factors made a massive inflation of home prices, and then, of course, it had a compressing down. And the American people, most of them didn't understand how these factors work. That's why I didn't buy a home, because then it would be coming crashing down. I'm like, I'm just going to wait. I'm going to wait. But so you got all these factors, and then, oh, troubled asset rescue program or TARP, whatever it was, to bail out the banks, $800 billion, which actually is a heck of a lot more than that. And I was like, well, you heard our congressman, Republican, he voted for that. It's like, are you out of your freaking mind? Republicans are saying that. And, oh, well, the banks are saying, oh, we're going to go ahead and help people refinance. Well, the state of Washington, Chris, where you are, the state of Washington, there was a class action suit against Bank of America, B of A, because only like 1% of the people had actually helped through this TARP program. It was a joke. It's like our government has become of the bankers, by the bankers, for the bankers. I mean, it's out of control.
Yeah,
and now people
and,
are really
in
my county. Yeah, in my county, I talked to one of the real estate agents in one of the bigger cities, and she's like, yeah, last year, 50% of our real estate transactions were foreclosures. Now we're down to 25%. It's unbelievable.
Well, here's what's scary about this, Kelly. I think I got a couple of years on you, but I've been through several of these manufactured cycles, you know, where it was government politicians and banks that caused them in my lifetime, whether it was the savings and loans, you know, when OPEC formed in Alaska and we were on a boom up there and everything crashed, I went through that. That was the first one I experienced as an adult. It cost me my, you know, a fortune. You know, there's so many of these, and they used to cycle about every 8, 10, 12 years. And now, they, you know, especially with technology and this world market, this concept of America being this money market game instead of us making anything, we don't have that real value that we used to have as an industrial nation. Yeah, we've got industries, a few, but if one of them goes cripple, we don't have that machine. It's all tied to all these money games. And that's spread all over the world. And so, you know, a 2% dip and the whole thing comes crashing down. And the scary part is, in the past, even though, you know, all of us have our issues with the Fed and Nixon taking us completely off the gold standard and all those issues, you know, for us who have studied that or understand it. But the scary part is that after the crash, the things they did were exactly the opposite things they needed to do. And I remember in the dot bomb, because I lived in, you know, in the Redmond Bellevue, Microsoft, you know, our Silicon Valley up here, and that dot bomb crash, I was in that. I knew people, you know, I watched people lose fortunes in that, you know, all the people working for, you know, for stock options, people working for IPO status with companies, and then all, and that just disappeared. There was like $1 trillion disappeared in the blink of an eye in the marketplace. Well, the reason we kept waiting for the correction, and we never felt it because they were building the housing bubble boom. And that's when a lot of the regulations released, and a lot of the, you know, hey, let's get more housing, let's get more inventory and more building, and because building industry is huge, it's a big chunk of your market. But what happened was they loosened it up even more right after the dot bomb to prevent us from going into the corrective crash that we needed to go through. And so we went from the dot bomb, which everybody freaked out, but it was like, wow, where's the crash? Well, it didn't happen because they had the other bubble was building. So everybody just kind of transferred their energy and their losses into the housing bubble. So when that crashed, we had nothing else. You know, as a country,
yeah,
we've been pushing our manufacturing offshore for the last 20 years. And so, you know, we've been playing this money game, you know, we're the money market of the world. And that was our whole economy. That's like saying, I'm going to build my personal finances on other people's money. That's really what it is. It's just fake. And so since the end of Bush and through Obama, everything that they have done, and it's amazing that the media has just protected this guy, but everything they've done and everything Bernanke's done is build several new big bubbles. And they I don't know. I have no idea. I've never seen them overlap bubbles like this, where they sat down and actually planned them to prevent the correction from coming. You know, in the past, if you study all economic trends in our country, you know, the banks and the Fed and the government would allow the correction to occur. And this time we've just built bubbles on top of bubbles on top of bubbles since the late 90s, since the dot-bomb crash. So, like I said, 50 cents on the dollar, maybe less, depending on who you talk to.
Oh, it's spooky. I mean, oh gee, another friend got foreclosed on. Oh, gee, another friend got foreclosed on. I had a buddy in Reno. His dad started a landscape company. Him and his two sons, well, the dad, Ray and Ray Jr., the two sons were being the construction managers, and they were making buku bucks. They all made a million, and two of them lost their million due to the weirdness of the housing market. You know, I wanted to slap my buddy upside the head. I said, dude, I could have told you this. I mean, he invested like somewhere in Louisiana with a bunch of homes, and then they all went on belly under. I mean, I had a client come back from Detroit. He told me about his homes. You know, you can buy a house for $30,000, rent it out for like $500. That's positive cash flow. And he's like, but I went and visited. I told my construction, if you get out of here, you're going to get shot. You know, he bought a couple. Yeah. He's going to buy a whole bunch more, but there's like whole vacant neighborhoods. You know, it's just unbelievable. And
they were giving money to any Tom, Dick, and Harry who thought they had an idea. You know
yeah.
what I mean? And Obama's been touting for 4 years that, and you know, that, hey, we've cleaned it all up and we have all this regulations and we've fixed all that. We haven't fixed crap. I've never seen them build bubbles like they have in this last one, and I've been around.
Well, I'm glad. See, I didn't have such an astute eye for this as you did. I mean, you experienced person, you looked around and you observed and you had a keen eye for it. I didn't. I read The Creature from Jekyll Island in 97, and he predicted what happened in the bubble in 94. In 1994, mm-hmm. he predicted this exact thing. J. Edward Griffin, The Creature from Jekyll Island. Everybody should read it. Anyway, so this is, I mean, China has had enough. China, Brazil, Argentina.
Yeah, the BRICS.
Venezuela, South America, they're all going to BRICS. Yeah, they're making a, yeah, BRICS. They're making a monetary system, a treaty, international treaty, that basically we're going to have a gold-based currency.
Well, you know that BRICS just rolled out a $100 billion consortium bond-backed fund.
I didn't know that.
They just made it available. So
explain BRICS a little better.
Well, BRICS is, you know, Brazil, Russia, India, and China, and then S is South America. Those are your five main companies or
South
countries
Africa,
involved.
Yeah,
that are involved. I mean, thank you. Sorry, that are involved in the BRICS consortium, and they've been kind of putzing around putting it together, you know, negotiating over the last 5 years. Well, they just had their last. They have a big major meeting every year. And, you know, you got the G8 and the G20, you know, the mm-hmm. top eight economies, the top 20 economies just happened in Russia. Russia was the host this year. But, you know, Russia, China, Brazil, India, South America, and then any of the other trading partners, whether it be, you know, Iran, you know, whatever, anybody who is sick of the U.S., of our politicians not fixing our structural problems, you know, our $90 to $100 trillion unfunded liability problem, and printing money and devaluing money, because when we print money, it devalues the trade dollar and petrodollar around the world. You know, it isn't like these people even have a vote on that, and that's the problem. So these countries have gotten together and they're building a consortium, a trade partnership to work together, and they have survived this economic downfall pretty well. Russia very well. China's little, you know, kind of overbuilt. You know, right now their debt to GDP is a little high, but Russia's only 8% debt to GDP, and they're the largest exporter of energy in the world, and they're still punching holes and still, you know, building those relationships. So anybody who doesn't understand Syria and the Middle East, it's all about Russia. And it ain't about communist Russia, because Russia's not communist anymore. Russia has been rebuilding itself for the last 20 years. And it's all about the fact that Russia controls mostly gas and oil. it goes into Europe. They have like 40% of the market. They just cut a huge deal with China. And people don't even know this, but Russia oil companies are in Iraq because Iraq doesn't trust the U.S. companies. They tried to give Kurdish oil field to Russia to develop because they didn't want BP in there because they're sick of the European-American problems.
Yeah. Well, here's another big picture thing I figured out just now. You mentioned all these jobs getting shipped overseas. Well, when we are the world currency, which that's changing now, but when we're the world currency and we inflate it, you know, I had a buddy I knew years ago. He was like, he'd go back and forth in Belize, and he had a trading company. He was doing really well. And he said, my gosh, I can hire a servant for a dollar a day.
Mm-hmm.
U.S. dollar, they think that's killer. Well, our value is way overinflated. Well, what does that do? That means you can ship a job to India, and they're happy to work for a dollar an hour or whatever it is. Okay.
Until that economy catches up.
Right. But what I'm saying is we have shot ourselves in the foot in the international job market because of inflation. We have taken the jobs here and we shipped them overseas because of inflation.
Yeah. Well, and overregulation and taxation too. You know, there's three components involved in there. But, you know, the corporations, see, Morton Friedman, there was an interview, and I always like to, you know, post it every so often on my group. But, you know, he had an interview. He said, here's the problem. When government thinks it's going to control corporations and they start diving in and micromanaging everything and regulating everything, the government will always win because corporations are for-profit businesses. And they're much more aggressive, and they have a survival mentality.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Real quick, because I do see we only have about 3 minutes left, a little bit less than three minutes left of the live portion of the show. So for folks who want to listen to the extended version, call in at 347-945-7428, and then push 1 on your number dial if you'd like to chime in. Or you can wait till the show is over, where the archives will be immediately available after the show. That's to listen to those. And also share the link with folks out there. And also you can also download it as well. And you can even put it on smartphones and listen to it and CD on CDs and CD players and cars, things of that nature. So folks, go ahead and check that out. And so we'll go in and continue with you guys. I just want to add that in for folks who want to listen to the extended version. Go ahead.
Yeah, I didn't mean to. Sorry, we were on a roll. We got off into this thing.
Go ahead. It's great information. I think it's great information for people to be able to hear about.
Let me bring this back to healthcare, okay? If I may.
Yeah. Good point.
Sure. Definitely.
Okay. So, what's happening right now? Is people cannot afford, due to inflation, endless regulations, and the attorneys, they cannot afford health care. This is one of the consequences is boo-boo care, Obamacare, boo-boo care. I kind of like that. You know, boo-boo. You got a little boo-boo, you know, a little kid.
Boo-boo,
cracks me up. Yeah, let me kiss and make it better. You got a little boo-boo. Okay, so inflation has hit us in so many ways past Tuesday. It's stupid, and people just are screaming for it. But we have got to change our monetary policy, or we're just going to be in the dust.
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I just heard it was just giving me the time, how much time to actually left of the live version. It was like 60 seconds, you know,
I thought we crashed there for a second. Well, you're saying, Kelly, is very true. What we're dealing with now, and I always have to be careful about being too realistic about what's going on, because this argument that we're having right now with Obamacare and the fact that people are fighting to, you know, defund it or delay it or anything, you know, is an important argument. But we know that it is only part of the problem. I mean, it's a small part of the problem. You got the debt ceiling coming up, you know, and Robert, the people who say we should have waited, you know, there's people who actually believe that you should have let Obamacare be implemented so it you know, basically got so bad that it was easier to change. I just think that's a risky mentality because it would have been devastating. So we got people who, you know, that whatever's happened has happened. They've chosen to fight, and that's good. And it's just one of the issues. I mean, I have a thread on finances and economy on my group, which I would rather talk about every day, all day, but it's just not that popular. So, you know, unfortunately, you know, it's going to have to get really bad before people spend the same amount of energy they are on this argument as they are on the economy, unfortunately.
And, of course, that group is Coalition of Freedom on Facebook.
Yeah. I just got to clean up about 2,000 posts today.
Oh, wow.
Well, you know, I build threads.
Right.
You know what I mean? I build threads. And then when the thread moves or something changes in the strategy, then I'll build a new thread or it gets too big. And then I'll go back and try to, you know, make sure I save articles and vids and then delete things out. So, you know, just keep the group clean because I'm not into, you know, like posting news of the day. That doesn't do anything. You know, that's one of the biggest detriments to social media is everybody running around posting shit thinking they're doing something. That's not doing something. That's just posting stuff. You know, you want to educate. You want to have have discussions. You want to educate
right.
people so when they go out into the marketplace that they can, you know, help change opinions or get people on board. So when something happens and it's time to, you know, rally people up and make those calls, like with the Second Amendment battle, that you've got an educated group that will go to work. You know, 95% of the people on social media or Facebook just run around posting articles all day long and they think they're working. You know, it's kind of sad, but you are. You're working for the media for free.
Yeah, making posts and then, you know, some of the silly arguments that you see, you know, with people going back and forth. So, I mean, you know, some of the articles, of course, and YouTube videos, things of that nature that people put out there, of course, you know, it is good to share those because it is informational.
Sure.
But then you take that
as long as you do something with it.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. That's why I build threads. You know, I will take a picture that represents that topic, you know, whatever it is, and post it up there and try to get people to focus and stay on that thread because as soon as you start posting stuff, it just pushes everything else down below it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember when I tripped over that as an idea. And that's the problem with a page, with a Facebook page, is that in the old days, you know, I like the group concept because the active posts stay high. Stay up on top, and that's what you want because you know, when people come along and 10 people post something, it shoves all the good stuff down off the page.
Right, and then you have to either pin it or you have to keep bumping it.
Yeah, and you can only pin one item. They had three. When they first launched the pin item, they had three, which I liked, and then
mm-hmm.
they took it down to one. So you can only – so you're always – you know, you have to keep stuff bumped up. And you can't do that on a page, unfortunately. You know, you post three or four items and it's off the page and nobody scrolls. You know, everybody's bouncing the surface of, you know, they just run across the surface. So the important stuff gets buried, you know, from the frivolous
right.
crap that gets posted.
Yeah, and there's times you just got to keep scrolling down just to find anything. That's frustrating.
Yeah. Well, and you know, I learned something by accident and it'd work on my group because I build a picture, you know, I'll build a thread with a picture and
mm-hmm.
instead of and people are getting better at finding the thread, whether it's the 2014 election or we want to talk about Syria or we want to talk about Obamacare or, you know, we have two threads. We have the Obamacare thread, which is probably the fifth one we've had. You know, I'll delete them out when they get too big and start over when something changes in the market. But I figured this out by accident because I was cleaning up the group. I go, if you go into the photo section, because I keep my group clean, you know, I don't have 9,000, you know, frivolous photos of things. My photos are the heads of the threads that we have going on. So if you go
right.
into photo and you look and you go, oh, there's Chris's photo on Africa or on economics. You know, the photo shows you what the thread is. Click on it, And then you can add your article or your comment right there, because when you go into photo and you open a photo up, the comments are on the right. So it makes the I don't know why it took me this long to figure it out, but people are like going, oh, thank God, you know, because instead of having to scroll, you know, to go, where in the hell is that thread on economics? Because it'll get shut, it'll get pushed down as people post stuff. You just go into the tick and you go, oh, there's his economics file. Click on it, and then there you can post right there. You know.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, I'm going, duh. Yeah, I just did. Well, and the only reason it'll work on my group is because I actually build photo. You know, I'll actually post a picture at the head of the thread. You know.
Right.
So, whatever that's for. So anyway, maybe, you know, when people are listening, that I haven't told that to anybody yet, because I'd have to take my pinned article off, or, you know, that we have right now. We got the shutdown, you know, at the top, and I'd have to take it off and post something there, you know, and I don't want to do that right now. But maybe I'll, you know, I don't know where I'll put it. Maybe I'll put it in a header. I'll build a header that people, so it's right in front of everybody's face, because it saves me time doing that.
So real quick, I do see some folks who decide to call in and listen to the extended period. If you'd like to chime in, just push the 1 on your number dial, and we'll get you in there. We've got plenty of time tonight, you know, left in the extended version of the show, a little bit less than an hour, probably about 52 minutes, something like that. But go ahead, Kelly. I heard you're getting ready to chime in, so go ahead.
Kelly.
I thought he was.
He fell in that hole again.
He fell in it. So he's doing a lot of digging. He keeps falling and have to climb himself out. And you guys touched up, but I was gonna add to that, and I can't exactly remember what else. Remember, I was going to say. So, well, yeah, we're going
to get older.
Oh, geez, see, I'm already on my way. No, but you know, we've got the you know debate with the. Oh, that's what I was going to ask: is how long do you think the? And then we'll have ask Kelly too. But so, how long do you think this government shutdown is going to go? I mean, we already talked about earlier tonight that there's a number of Republicans, and unfortunately, I can see that number increasing. And we're going to be getting ready to cave in. So how long do you think this government shutdown is going to last?
You know, I can't – if I was a betting man, I wouldn't bet on this one because I don't know. Watching it going back and forth, you know, with 2014 right around the corner, the pressure's on, you know, these guys. You know, who knows how much information the NSA has on these people or Boehner for that fact. But – so I don't really, I can't predict it. What I'm trying to do is kind of stay, you know, trying to stay up with it as much as I can and follow the strategies. And then, like, when you read that letter tonight at the beginning of the show, I just got off the phone with Rex before I called in. You know, we were just kind of bouncing things around each other, you know, just trying to prop each other up and make sure we're not missing anything. It's a wild one. You know, Cruz ticked off a lot of the establishment people because he went straight to the people, which fires us up because that's what we want. We just want people to do what the hell we voted them in to do. You know, and it's kind of you have to pull yourself from the minutiae, you know, and the back and forth because, you know, the typical battle, media fed battle is going on right now. And you just have to figure out what it is that you believe in. And focus on your information sources that feed you good information, you know, and study as much as you can handle, you know, because it can really burn you out, especially if you get on C-SPAN. Like, I've watched both the House and the Senate back and forth. I mean, it was exhausting, you know, trying to stay up with all that stuff and frustrating. The big thing was the cloture vote. That was the problem. When Republicans voted to move it to cloture and drop it to 51 from 60 votes, they weakened the whole conversation. That was the original problem. So the House has just passed 4 bills, which they couldn't pass yesterday because they didn't have a two-thirds vote, but the House has a similar rule to the Senate's cloture bill, where they were able to get it through with a majority. So the parks bill, the parks are funded national. You know, the reserve, you know, the non-full-time military, the NIH, which is the research, which had to do with those 200 kids, you know, on cancer, and Washington, D.C., they passed all that tonight. Now it goes back over to the Senate. And here's what's really funny. The Senate didn't do anything with it. The Senate wasn't even there. Well, no, they weren't even there to vote on it or vote it up or down. You know, they went home. You know, of course, Reed is always saying how important it is to, you know, he was complaining about Cruz, the length of his filibuster, and he sat there and bitched for 2 hours saying, you know, you wasted a whole bunch of time, and then he sits there and drags on and drags. You know, you can just see the show, you know, the game. And so because of that cloture vote issue, you know, they can come. It's probably going to be a party line split with a couple Dems and Repubs, you know, based on the issue. But the Dems have dug in. I mean, Harry Reid, when that media gal said, you don't think it's important to make sure these 200 kids with cancer can get funded? Isn't that a good idea? One kid, 200 kids' lives? And Harry Reid, he blew up on her. And
it was
hilarious. You know,
why would we want to do that? It's like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, why would I want to do that? I got 1,000 people out of work in my district, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's like, well, they've got their own problems. Like, okay, so you're gonna compare that with children with cancer, you SOB.
Well,
the Dems
have defined themselves. I mean, you know, everybody's picking on the Republicans, trying to put this on the Republicans' head, and the president has said for a long time, I'm not going to negotiate. What?
Well, the media's, you know, touting that, you know, it's going to be like the 1996 where the Republicans got the blame, and we've seen, you know, and also we're so far from, and they think it's going to somehow affect. And they'll talk about how it could affect 2016, and we're so far from 2016. This isn't going to affect the 2016 election. This government shut down. They're trying to compare it with the 1996, and that's not going to happen. But
it's not the same, and I'll tell you why. Because number one, the number of government services shut down is different than 96, because through the years, they've increased the list of essential services. There's a lot more people working. You know, I mean, there's a difference between a shutdown and nobody goes to work, and there's a shutdown and only 40% of them are furloughed, and they'll get paid back anyway. I mean,
it's just
a freaking game. You know, it's a game, and Obama and the left are gonna show you, like, shutting down the memorial and the kids with cancer, and they already got the media screaming and hollering that people's lives will be ruined and the market will crack. It's the sequester argument all over again, and they're gonna play that emotional crap, and the Republicans are gonna take it, and which is unfortunate because I don't think very few of them are really arguing it well, but they're gonna take it and try to be logical like they typically are. And it's going back and forth. So I don't really know. There's a hidden agenda going on there, and there's always deals going on in the back. And I just don't have a feel for it yet, I guess is what I'm saying. You know, exactly where it's going to end up. But this is the beginning of the budget discussion. You know, because you've got this issue, then you've got the budget ceiling, or, you know, coming up. It's a mess. I mean, these guys are spending $3.6 trillion a year keep this government running. We've never had this number of people on welfare and unemployment and food stamps and, you know, no recovery. I don't care what Obama says or the left says, there is no recovery yet.
No.
It hasn't even begun. We haven't even hit the bottom. Go ahead.
Mikhail, you back from your hole? That didn't sound right, but I guess Kelly's well, Kelly, just feel free to chime in whenever you're able to climb out.
You might have. you still show him in the
yes, go ahead. I'm on the switchboard. Yeah, he's still there.
Maybe he fell asleep.
Well, if we hear some snoring, we might know that that's what happened.
Well, and I don't know. I like it. I like the battle. I like the fight. you know, and my goal.
I'm
is
actually
to
surprised
try to,
we've gotten this far. I'm surprised we got this far. I really thought they'd cave before now.
Well, they never would have taken
the
battle
up. About. What's that?
Yeah, but when you say they, well, who do you mean by they?
Well, I'm just talking about the majority of the Republican Party. I'm talking about, you know, Boehner, for one. I'm actually surprised that, and then, they're still standing strong on voting to, and then try to get these other things passed, kind of piecemealing, getting things budgeted instead of giving in. Now, we did already give
in. Well, they're trying to take away the game that the Democrats play. You know,
right.
Trying to, pit our veterans against us, the needy, 200 kids that need, experimental cancer, blah, blah, blah. They want to take that stuff off the table and so they can force this thing into a proper conversation. Here's the thing that I haven't heard anybody say, and this is kind of, you may find this interesting, is that in reality, the Republicans are doing Obama a favor. Because he's put everything else off on this plan. This plan has failed. It's not ready for mainstream. You know, he gave the major corporations, a year delay illegally. He does not have the legal
right
to change the law.
Right, power to do that. Right.
Yeah, he doesn't have the law. We talk about the Constitution. So all that was left was the rest of us. The rest of the world. Who's going to be forced on these exchanges or poor people or young people. And so the system's already failed. So I don't know what their end game is except to try to hang on, the best they can and make everybody else pay for it. And that's impossible. The only reason Obamacare ever made sense on paper or in a calculator was if everybody was involved. And then was still $1 trillion
right.
to implement. You know what I'm saying? It's just insanity. This is liberal insanity at its best. And so, we're dealing with double the numbers. We're dealing with a fraction of the people left after he's given exemptions to everybody.
Right.
It's a total failure. And so in reality, if we actually had honest politicians, they would have got together and they would have figured this out and said, hey, let's just delay this for a year and get on about our lives and deal with it in a year. But you have two opposing ideology, so you have a war.
Well, it's also, it's something that Obama's been fighting for, since he's gotten to office the first time. I mean, it's his legacy legislation. I mean, that and then, immigration. But that's what he wants.
Oh, yeah,
but
don't forget
for.
That Nobel Peace
Hillary,
Prize.
Right? Hmm?
And that Nobel Peace Prize.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, well, probably one of the most ill-deserved Nobel Peace Prizes in history of
hey,
the...
Hey, I'll tell you what, if all you have to do is fly around the world and apologize around the world to get a Nobel Peace Prize, maybe I ought to, partake in that.
There you go. Be man of the year.
Oh, my God. Yeah,
well that,
here we are.
Like get that,
I mean, we're in the
picture,
we're in the middle of it.
Yeah.
Isn't it great? Isn't it great? Don't we love it?
Yeah, not really. I mean, it's trying to find, as I said, description, trying to find some logic in the chaos. But you wonder if whether it's created chaos. I mean, are doing it for
some of it.
Yeah, a purpose creating all this.
There's no doubt. There's, I mean, you look at the scandals, the IRS scandal, the Benghazi, all the way back to Fast and Furious. Whatever, but we had a slew of them come out right after each other. Bam, 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 bam. NSA, all of that. You wonder how much of that. I mean, Obama's administration's leaked a lot of stuff. So, yeah, do people create scandals? Yes. Do they take advantage of scandals they didn't create? Yes. Well, the problem is you can only spin so many plates at a time, when your country's, got a whole list of issues that it needs to be dealing with that you won't deal with. And then you have all these other things, come up all at the same time. Pretty soon stuff starts to collapse. And most second-term presidencies are pretty rough anyway.
I said the plates start dropping. You're using the spinning the plates analogy.
Yeah. Well, like I was saying, most second-term presidencies don't go real well anyway. you know, it was just like the, you know, the whole concept of the lame duck Congress. So a lot of his first 4 years are catching up to him. And the only reason that he has the approval rating he has is he's got mainstream media lying 24/7. And that's
under,
it. I mean,
last time I've seen, he's under 50%. He's under like 44%.
35.
And of course, Congress
40.
Is at 10.
I got Kelly here. Question for you.
Okay,
hey,
there you are. Welcome back, Kelly.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, I had to take some friends home, the ones that we went out mining today. But anyway, question for you. Of the 57 states.
I told you
states,
it was
all. So, of
yeah,
the 57
yeah.
states, you know, how many are for Obama and how many are against?
On what
no,
day?
Wait, 58 according
states,
to... Man? Yeah, 58 because Puerto Rico passed it to become a new state. So, anyway, okay, I'm jesting. All right, I want to go off on a new topic that relates deeply to healthcare, but I'll get there in a bit.
Okay, go ahead.
So, Sunday I was talking with a buddy. He's one of these, like, way up there legal genius kind of study the law. He's got the sheriff's department on the run because they kind of by accident grabbed his gun and the judge gets back. Well, anyway, he grows marijuana, and he's been telling me about this book, The Emperor Knows Where His Clothes. And we had an interesting discussion. Of course, he loves the Constitution and everything else. He's saying, yeah, you know, it was very prevalent as a industrial plant, if you will, for decades. The USS Constitution, the ship, had like tons of hemp, the sails and the mast, the riggings and the rope and blah, blah, blah. What's your guys' thoughts on industrial hemp? Then I'm going to share some news with you.
Well, I've always been an advocate for years on industrialized hemp.
Yeah, it's a huge industry around the world. It's a huge industry around the world.
Yeah, except here. I mean, anything you make from wood, you can make from hemp. I mean, you can make clothes,
like,
you can make, you know, hats, you can make, I mean, hemp seeds. You can actually eat hemp seeds, and you can make cereal. I've eaten some of it, and you can make clothing and furniture, but go ahead.
Okay. I'll get to the big news. I got to take this as a time order, how I just came to the conclusion. You know, I'm thinking, well, you know, if hemp has all the stuff I've been hearing about, basically you take the stock of the mills, and that's from you make the fiber, you make the plywood out of hemp. It's going to be cheaper. It's going to be stronger. You make clothes. You make all sorts of anything that cotton would do. The seeds, you get 600 pounds per acre. Corn is like 800 or 900 pounds per acre, something like that. But anyway, so looking at all this, okay, oh, my gosh. He says, yeah, his pigeons love the hemp seed more than other stuff, but it's real expensive. So he's going on and all these, you know, there's people, had a client, his friend, got healed with pancreatic cancer by some extracts from hemp. And I say hemp, I'm not saying marijuana, the THC. You can actually grow this stuff. When the males germinate the females, basically the THC concentration is like nil. So industrial purposes are insane. He kept talking about this book, The Emperor Wears No Clothes. And he keeps telling me about this, and I'm like, I'm still stuck in the mental momentum of, oh, marijuana bad. I mean, I don't smoke it. I, you know, if you want to do that, you know, God bless you. Just don't tell me about it. But you know what? You know, and anyway, so he's causing me to come around and, hey, this ain't so bad. It's an industrial thing. And it's got me to the point where, like, oh, my gosh, in the state of Jefferson, we need to grow this stuff like crazy because we can live for. And he's talking about 1600s, 1700s, the founding fathers grew it. And it's a quite a plant that produces, drum roll please, produces independence and self-sufficiency. So you're not so freaked out about getting government aid or a job for a corporation. It creates an enormous amount of self-sufficiency. The leaves can be turned into ethanol, power vehicles. Oh, my gosh, it's like this plant. And he's like, dude, you're kidding it. I mean, he's not a pot smoker. He's like, dude, you're finally getting it. I said, yeah. They're trying to take self-sufficiency away by demonizing marijuana. I was thumbing through this book, and I saw this the cartoon where supposedly some black guy took marijuana and raped three women. It's like, come on. You know, the propaganda they did to shut down this miracle plant for its industrial uses is insanity. Now, here's the good news. Are you ready?
Always ready for good news.
Well, before I get to that, I got to get to one more point. He explained to me that Obamacare is set up that if you are, you have to take a test for marijuana. If you have THC in your blood, you're denied health care. I'm like, oh my gosh.
Really?
And it sticks in your system for like 6 weeks. But if you have marijuana in your bloodstream, you're denied care. And I'm like, what? So he says, yeah, they're doing everything they can to make sure the self-sustaining plant is not put in the hands of the people. And they've done it again through Obamacare. I'm like, what? He said, yeah. So it's, I mean, he's well researched. And so here's the good news. I think it was Monday or Tuesday, California passed, Jerry Brown signed it, our governor, the Industrial Hemp Act, allowing California.
Talk about it. Yeah.
It just happened. You know?
Awesome.
Yeah, because I was thinking, well, I'm just, you know, I have a farm boy, but I want to grow this stuff like crazy, do everything I can to make sure there's no THC. I mean, I don't really care. I don't smoke stuff. I don't care. It's the plant and the endless versatile uses of it. I'm like, oh, my gosh. California did it. Of course, one caveat is, well, as long as the feds will let us do it. Jeez, Jerry Brown. Bowing down to the God Almighty of the federal government. But isn't that mind-blowing? California is going to grow it. And
yeah,
another thing
I
tell you.
Is a federal, well, I believe they'd have to get through a federal ban, because there's a federal ban against industrialized hemp right now. I mean, they're talking about, I mean, this was, gosh, months ago. I believe Rand Paul talked about it a little bit. And then they were doing some research with the agricultural department there, and then one of the universities there. They were going to do cost-benefit analysis of I guess, the regulating industrialized hemp or legalizing industrialized hemp. But I haven't heard much from it, much of it for months. But I thought they passed the federal law against industrialized hemp.
Title 46 and 255 of the U.S. Code, interpretive note number 14, and citing Prince versus U.S. and more recently United States versus Bond. I'm sorry, they can have jurisdiction on private property within a state unless they have, so if they have gained it through the legislature of the state and filed with the Secretary of State, they don't have jurisdiction. Anyway, this self-sustaining plant that makes people free, not because of the THC, but because of its crop. I've gotten to the farm, like, oh my gosh, I want to grow it. And then I learned more about it. It's like, oh my gosh, you mean the males can pollinate for like well over a half a mile away? And well, why is that important? The THC concentration in the female plants, if they are not pollinated, that's when the THC in the female plants takes off. And so if you have male plants intermixed with your female plants, the pollen from the males causes the females to stop producing THC. The female plants will only grow like 2 or 3 feet tall once they're pollinated, and then they produce a whole bunch of seeds and everything else, and the males keep growing. So I'm like, oh my gosh, I've been pulled out of the matrix again. This is mind-blowing.
Yeah, Chris was saying in the chat, because I accidentally got disconnected here, you just asked me if, did you know that hemp was legal to pay taxes with up till the 1880s? That's interesting. I did not know that.
I didn't know that either. The Constitution was written on hemp.
I heard that was not actually true. I mean, I hear mixed information on that.
Okay, well, I'd like to see that, but I'm just like, oh my gosh. And you know, I'll say it again. I mean, I'm just like, I got to study this more. One of the reasons why I'm excited about this is my father in Iowa made Emmett County, Iowa, one of the wealthiest counties in the country for about 5 or 6 years. He did a innovation where instead of buying these pit silos and owning was these harvest store silos, those blue things mm-hmm. that stick up in the sky out in the farms where you owe the bank forever. But he said, well, I'm going to dig a hole in the ground, put concrete on the bottom. I'm going to put silage in there, which is basically you go a couple inches off the ground. You take the whole plant when it's still green, you throw it in the ground, you cover it. Cattle love it. You mix it with ear corn. And he made a bunch of money. Local paper did an expose. Everybody and their brother was doing it in the county, growing cattle and making big, big bucks. It was an innovation. And I see industrial hemp as another one of these innovations. And California is so hurt and so bad that if we legalize it with a certain, you know, I would suggest a THC concentration, just minimal, so that obviously the females have been pollinated. But if the THC concentration is like nil, grow it as a crop. Agriculture is huge in California. If we can grow it, we could actually get ourselves out of debt and maybe even afford all these stupid social programs. But I can't believe we did it.
Yeah, you can make, I mean, pretty much anything you can make from wood, cotton,
cardboard.
Yeah, anything, cardboard, yeah, anything you can make with hemp. And then I just put in the, on the Bard's Logic political talk page on Facebook, I just put a link that Chris gave me. It's called The Marijuana Conspiracy, The Reason Hemp is Illegal. And so for folks listening, check that out on the Bard's Logic political page there on Facebook. And then if you'd like the page, and there's also the Bard's Logic political talk group. You can also join that as well, and be much appreciated. Yeah, definitely check that out. And thank you again, Chris, for sending me the link. Well, I do see that there's less than 20 minutes there for the live, or it's not even live, the extended version of the show. So, yeah, that's a pretty interesting article, and we have to at least look at just scanning through it. There's a video on there, too, and it's a couple videos on there. So that would be pretty cool. I've been looking forward to reading it. But if folks want to see it, they can check it out there on the Facebook page.
So here's a little bit of humor. Okay. A little bit of humor about if it's true that Obamacare, if you're on marijuana, you don't get Obamacare, all right? Obviously, I wait to, again, shut down, vilify marijuana, shut it down. If it's true, then Republicans are, in a nutshell, supporting marijuana, and they don't even know it.
Well, I mean, yeah, I know what the arguments against being able to grow hemp, it's always so easy to be hide, you know, hidden within marijuana plants, blah, 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 blah. But, you know, I'm going to read more of that article. I think it's more that it's, you know, the government's able to get more money by keeping it illegal.
Well, another thing about it, you know, compared to alcohol, it's hard to hide a still. And alcohol comes in large volumes. It's easy to tax. Very easy to tax alcohol. Marijuana is not. It's just really hard to tax marijuana.
Well, yeah, but if you, you know, if you're able to legalize it and then, you know, grow it and have farms, then you can, you know, find some way of, not that I'm big on finding ways to tax, don't get me wrong, to find more taxes, but, I mean, you would think that if you were to legalize it, it actually would make it easier to keep track of and to, you know, and to put tax on it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, but, yeah, if you obviously, if
industrial hemp. I mean, we're distinguishing here. When we say marijuana, it's got THC. Hemp doesn't. It's just an industrial plant, like a prop.
Right. Yeah, they said you have to try to smoke like an acre of hemp to get the same THC content of like one plant of marijuana.
Yeah.
So.
And it's hard to hide an acre of hemp, you know?
Yeah.
If it was up to me, I'd grow 10 acres as soon as I can and figure out a way to, you know, I do engineering process plants. I would get turning the leaves and whatever else into ethanol. I mean, like right now. And of course,
that'd be
real
pretty cool. I know really they've got these cars out there, speaking of, you know, alternative fuels, things of that nature, where they have cars that actually run on the expended grease from, like, French fry vats and stuff like that. You can actually run your car off of cooking grease.
Well, yeah, you
know,
can make ethanol out of it.
I heard it makes cars like French fries, but, you know, I guess I could get over that.
Yeah. Well, it's a carbon molecule. A carbon molecule is absolutely phenomenally versatile. And you can make ethanol out of soybeans, regular beans. You can make ethanol out of so many things. Switchgrass is a big one. And
mm-hmm.
hemp. And it's a carbon molecule. You go down to the, you know, the element, and it's carbon. It's so versatile. So the powers that be in their oil cartel, they do not want us to
have... That's a big part
have,
of it.
Yeah, and California did this. It's like I had a buddy who worked in the Senate Republican caucus, and his name is Ray, and he was a great guy, the same guy that made $1 million, lost $1 million. He said, yeah, whenever we're proposing a bill, whatever, before we can even hit a committee or anything, it has to go to the oil boys for review and approval.
Wow.
Yeah, and I think it's E85, or E87, it's 85% ethanol.
E85.
Yeah, it's 85%
mm-hmm.
ethanol and 15% regular gasoline. Why? Because of the oils in the gasoline. You know, South America tried pure ethanol and burned up engines for a period of time, but with a mix of regular gasoline, the oils are in there enough that the engines don't get degraded. So the powers that be and the oil boys are not going to have the grip on the American people because of this.
Right, well, and then with what Chris mentioned earlier tonight, you know, with the, you know, with Russia and being one of the, you know, top exporters, you know, of oil, then I think it's going to be very important for the future for, you know, America to find alternative fuel sources, you know, for their vehicles, things that normally run with gasoline and oil, to find something that's an alternative for that.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's... We might look back someday when we get a lot more free because of so many tactical maneuvers by the powers that be to oppress us, you know, breaking out this, breaking out that, breaking out from all these things. We might realize, how did they do this? It's kind of spooky. I mean, it's like, it's time to quote Morpheus. And now, Neo, I will show you just how deep the rabbit hole goes.
What you got there, Kelly?
Well, that's what he said. I just, anyway.
For some reason, I don't know why, I just thought thought you were going to like play an audio or something like that.
Well, how can you top that quote by Morpheus? And now, Neo, I will show you how deep the rabbit hole goes. You know, the level of oppression and games and vilifying a plant that can produce independence. Oh, my gosh. I mean, they've got their handle on corns with GMOs. And, oh, by the way, there's another farmer who did another experiment in his barn. Natural corn next to a corn cob with GMO corn. They didn't even touch the GMO corn. They devoured the natural corn in, like, days. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, I've got some mixed thoughts in the whole GMOs. I think some GMOs are actually pretty interesting, but others, especially those that carry their own pesticides and herbicides and things of that nature, then then those are the ones I'm not, you know, just cross-pollination and things of that nature. That, yeah, I have trouble with this. I don't like this kind of genome. The other ones I find fascinating, like the strawberries that actually have been spliced with, I guess, some genes from fish, saltwater fish, because you splice the genes from saltwater fish in with the strawberry, and you make, what it does, it gets your frost-resistant strawberries so that the crops wouldn't be, you know, they'd be more frost-resistant and not be destroyed if you have an early frost. And then you also have, and this is actually saved lives, it's what it's called golden rice, in which they took beta-carotene from daffodils. And they took the beta-carotene from the daffodils and they spliced it into the gene of a grain of rice, grains of rice. And actually, the reason why I call it golden rice, it gives the rice a golden color. Now, what I mean by it's, you know, save lives and, you know, some health, and maybe more so save some health than lives, but probably some lives too, in that in a lot of your poorer nations, rice is a staple food. But while it does have the carbohydrates in it, it doesn't have things such as vitamin A, which, of course, vitamin A protects against blindness. Okay, so you have a lot of your kids, becoming blind because they're not getting sufficient amount of vitamin A. Well, the beta-carotene or vitamin A, of course, you know, you always see the jokes about, you know, carrots, you never see carrots wearing glasses because it's got the beta-carotene in the carrots and you're about to see carrots, blah, blah, blah. So you have this rice that's a staple food, special diet for these poor nations, and these kids eat it. Well, now they're eating this rice that's got the beta-carotene in it. Now, of course, some people like to just give them carrots, but these people can't even afford carrots. They could really just afford rice. But then if you have, this rice with the beta-carotene in it, then it can help them fight against childhood blindness.
Wow. So, I mean, well, the Republicans did a genetic experiment.
Oh, yeah? What do you
hear
this?
Well, they, well, it comes down to a little joke. What do you get when you, you know, the symbol of the Republicans is the elephant. So,
right.
What do you get when you mix an elephant with a rhino?
The Republican Party now.
The correct answer is elephino.
Elephino. Got it. That's a good one. And I think that's, you know, it's funny, but I think it's, you know, kind of signifies, you know, what we're dealing with, you know, within the Republican Party. Well, I mean, I don't consider myself Republican per se, but I mean, I used to, and you know that, Kelly. And so there's many of the listeners here, but. Just the fighting and all, I mean, and all the stuff that the Republicans have been saying, even against Ted Cruz, not all of them, but some against Ted Cruz and Rand Paul, you know, in their fight against Obamacare. And I just wonder if there's going to be more of that to come when, you know, the more that this shutdown continues. Because, you know, you're hearing, you know, that at least from the Democrats, media saying, that, you know, oh, well, you know, the government's being held hostage by, you know, just a minority of the Republican Party. You know, and they're talking about the conservatives, talk about, you know, Ted Cruz, Rand Paul, you know, and others. And so, but now, as I've heard, there's some whispers where there's even some Republicans who are starting to throw their ire towards that group. You know, that group of Republicans. But I do see that there's about 15 minutes left, a little bit less of the extended version. But I'm going to go ahead and shut some things down. I'm kind of waiting here myself. But if you have any last comments or any comments you'd like to make, go ahead. And I, as I said, I do also see some folks who are listening to the extended version. So before I shut things down, if anyone would like to chime in, they can push the 1 on their number dial, or they could just listen to the final parts of the show and then just share the archives. And so I'd like to thank everyone for coming tonight and listening to the show. Definitely please share the link with people, get the information out. We really appreciate it. Also, check out Coalition of Freedom. They're on Facebook and the Bard's Logic Political Talk page as well, where you can find links to some of the things you heard on to the show, some of the sites you've heard about on the show. And also check out the Bard's Logic Political Talk website at www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com. We've got some great links to other places there, and also on the Give page, got some great charities for people can contribute to as well. You know, check that out. It'd be really appreciated by myself, as well as those charities, if you can help them. So also, Kelly, I'll leave it to you if there's any final thoughts that you'd like to have on for tonight's show, close things up.
Well, yeah, this is the most important encouragement I want to give to the listeners. When Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid names the Tea Party at fault to the government shutdown, bad you Tea Party people. I say that with warm affection and a big smiling grin. We have made a difference. We're coming together. Keep it up.
Well, definitely. You know, you got to keep on fighting, even though that things look bleak. I mean, as I said earlier tonight, I never thought that they would actually stand and have this government shutdown. I mean, y'all would have never, you know, I thought as the time was winding down towards it, that it wouldn't happen. But here we are, a couple days into it. We'll see how long it lasts. Hopefully they stand the ground and they don't cave. You know, Newt Gingrich said one of the worst things Republicans can do is cave. And I would definitely like to hear more from Newt, unless I haven't seen it. But I really haven't seen a lot from Newt on any of these issues, or I'm just missing it. So if anyone out there has some information that you heard about Newt and what he's saying about any of the issues we talked about tonight, just go ahead and send me a message from the contact page there on BardsLogicPoliticalTalk.com. You can just send a message through there, and I'll get the email, and I'll respond, and I really appreciate it. But, you know, I thought we would hear more from him. But, you know, as I said, maybe he's got a lot out there, and I just haven't seen it. So I will close out the show, as I do every night. And once again, thank you, everyone, for coming. We look forward to seeing you next week. We are working on guests for next week, so we'll see if we're able to bring her on. So, everyone, good night. Take care, and we'll finish with a song by Aubrey Ashburn. And you can hear more of her music by going to www.aubreyashburn.com. Take the couple minutes that it's on to enjoy the music, and we will see you next week. Take care, and good night.